silver spoon.
Kia ora, good morning. Welcome to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien. I'm going to be here from 9 till 12 this morning. We've got some great guests lined up for you today. First up, we're going to speak to Rachel and Donald from Laldi. And if I can just get my schedule up here. So Rachel and Donald are going to be talking to us on Zoom from Wellington and playing some songs to preview their upcoming show, which is here at 116 on Saturday, this Saturday the 8th at 7 p.m. Tickets $15 and $10. It's a one-hour show. And if you go to the Whangarei Fringe website, which is whangareifringe.co.nz, and click on the tile on the What's On page, it'll take you straight to the Event Finder page and you can buy your tickets there. We've had some great live music already at Fringe, and there's lots more coming up. Then at 9:30, I'm going to be chatting with Hayley Douglas and some other band members from Honey and Wildfire, who are playing soon here as well. At 10 o'clock, I've got a hopefully face-to-face interview with Kipling Davies Colley, whose show Intense Tiger Fist is playing at the Fringe After Dark, and I'll give you the dates for that when we talk to him. Then 11 o'clock, we've got Ben Caldwell, whose show Snowcock is at the Octagon Theatre, and he's flying up from Wellington today, or has flown up from Wellington, hopefully. And finally, at 11:30, Patrick Biss from Cicada is coming in, and he's going to play some live music as well. So let's get started with our conversation with Rachel and Donald. Main concern now is going to be that I won't be able to hear what they're saying, but let's give this a shot. So, okay, so welcome Rachel and Donald. Okay, that is going to be a problem because I can't hear what they're saying and I can't work out how to make that happen. So if you'll just bear with me for 1 second. I don't know how that's going to work. Okay. I think what I'll have to do is play when you're playing your songs, I'll have to plug you in, and otherwise I will talk to you using the studio mic. Okay, so hopefully this is going to work. It's going to look a bit weird because my face is going to be very close to the screen, but never mind. And I'll just point the microphone down there so that it's got its best chance of picking you up as possible. Sorry, I should have thought of this before, but it was a bit of a last minute technical thing, which is quite common on Beagle Radio, because we're all sort of, you know, enthusiastic amateurs. And I've had some remote technical support this morning from Dave and Ursula, but you know, here we are. Okay, so Rachel and Donald, first thing I wanted to ask you is about your name, your band name, which I think it'd be fair to say is an unfamiliar word for most people, Laldi.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you fixed on the name Laldi?
So in Scotland there's a fairly well-known phrase, Gie Laldi, which is often used to encourage somebody to kind of give it all you've got, put all of your passion and energy into something. Like if you're trying to break something with a really big hammer, you might say Gie Laldi. Or if you're wanting to like boot a rugby ball as far as you can, Gie Laldi. Or if you're doing some amazingly really awesome sick fiddle solo, you might be Gie Laldi.
Yeah. I describe it as like get rowdy.
Yeah.
In a wholesome, funking kind of a way.
Yeah.
And I think that really reflects a lot about our music.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We really like the kind of upbeat, energetic, traditional folk idiom. And so when we were looking at names, we wanted to have a name which related back to the kind of traditional folk thing. And an unusual name is always quite interesting in a band name.
Yeah.
It really helps in securing a domain name.
Yes.
And short band names are also, you know, quite good because long band names, you know, bring with them other difficulties. So we really liked that it was the one word. It was tight. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a pretty comprehensive explanation of the name. But you in our chat before we came on air, you said, you know, you get mispronunciation is an occupational hazard of a word like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long have you guys been going as a band?
About just over 2 years.
I think that's a little bit enthusiastic. I think we started maybe a year and a half ago. We had a bit of a slow start, I think, like a lot of people, because of lockdowns. Mm. Like, we played our first gig about a year ago, but we kind of were gearing up for that for a while. And then earlier this year, we had a lot of gigs cancelled, which was tough. But now we're kind of really into it, and we're getting out there, and it feels amazing.
And in Wellington, there are plenty of venues for music like yours?
There's a guy called Don Mackay who has been running a songwriter showcase for a while at Moon in Newtown.
Mm-hmm. Great bar.
Really great bar, and he's been a kind of stalwart of the folk scene for a while, and he's been really pushing, promoting that. And that's been really great to get varied talent in, just like, and keep the folk scene going. There's kind of old established clubs like Acoustic Roots, and
we're actually playing at the Wellington Bluegrass Society here in November, which is out of Tony, and that's a really, really fantastic, very well run club.
Cool.
And we've got a wonderful folk festival coming up in 2 weekends' time, almost, I think.
Right.
So we're going to be playing there as well. So yeah, there's some great music around Wellington, but I think everywhere you go, you know, what we do is a little bit niche in New Zealand, so we're definitely trying to generate more of an audience, more of a feeling, also trying to take our music out of some of those more traditional settings.
Right.
And bring it to the folk.
Right.
We played a really great gig at a bull shed in Wairarapa.
Wow.
A few weeks back, and that was a sellout success, so yeah, we're really stoked about taking music to
awesome.
The people.
And you look quite portable.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the good thing about a fiddle can create so much sound in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very big.
Yeah. And you find the fiddle and guitar combos are kind of good. You can do as much as you can do whatever you like with that combination.
Yeah, I mean, fiddle and guitar and voice does the vast majority of things. There's plenty of interplay we can figure out between that.
We do also have a third instrument, which you can't see on the screens, which is our stomp box, and we don't have it set up here this morning because we were worried about blowing out the speakers.
What is a stomp box?
It's like an acoustic wooden platform that you tap on to get this kind of sound going.
Right.
It's kind of like a bass drum sort of vibe, but like quite acoustic, which is quite nice.
Right.
Lots of people have like a little electronic piezo powered stomp box thing for just like a solid kind of kick drum backbeat type thing.
Yeah.
Or on the beat, just to give it a bit of oomph.
Yeah.
And I did a bunch of research, and I wanted something that was a bit more acoustic than that, and less electronic. And I found this amazing brand called Wazinator, which is from Australia. And it kind of looks like a giant plectrum, but made out of like hollow wood.
It's quite beautiful, actually.
It's quite beautiful, and it's just, and so we'll have that at our gig at 116.
Great.
And it's great when we'd be playing on stage with that, and all of a sudden the audience are like staring around, like, where's this amazing kick sound coming from?
Yeah. Wow.
Staring at my feet.
So, who plays the stomp box?
So, I play it normally, but it's big enough that I can just kind of like kick it across the stage to Rachel.
Oh, okay. And robust enough.
Yeah. I mean, often I play in boots with a bit of a heel, so if I'm like getting going with a reel or something really kind of driving, then I'll just use that.
Okay, cool. Hey, let's have a song. Technical support has arrived, so it might mean that I can conduct the rest of the interview through the mixer. But let's just plug you. Tell us what song you're going to play.
Well, I think I've got a question for you. Do you want a song or a tune, and do you want to know the difference?
Oh, go on then. It sounds fairly fundamental.
So a song is a song, and a tune is like a fiddle tune. And we do quite a 50-50 balance of both in the band, which we're really into.
Okay.
So yeah, do you want to kick off with
what have we got? You said you had three. Well, you said you had three songs ready. So what's the ratio? Is it two songs to a tune, or two tunes to a song, or?
We've got a good rowdy song that's kind of stormy.
Let's do that then. Let's do that one.
All right.
Yeah, let's do that one.
Okay.
Okay, what's it called?
The Crowd Has Spoken.
So this one's called Taken by the Sea. And it's inspired by Wanderlust, the incredible power of nature, and the interconnectedness of all things.
Great. Well, what a great introduction. Okay, I'm going to plug you in, and off you go. I forgot that. Okay, so that should be... MP3... Sorry?
Is the PC muted?
No. Your speaker is not working. Oh, God. Please check your connection and use a different speaker. Hi again. Can you hear me? Oh, God, this is not going well. I've got some technical issues with my laptop. It's saying my speaker's not working. So I I'm gonna have to try a different option. So can we just pause and I'll get back to you in a couple of minutes when I've had a chance to work something out. It's just one of those days. So just hold on for 1 second. I can't hear what you're saying. So, right. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I guess you guys didn't hear any of that, which is really annoying. But for some reason, that wasn't working on Zoom. So I'm just going to fade the playlist up again while we try and do something
see
about
at
it.
The court, I survive. Gonna be some dark days to follow. Gonna tell me what I know. I know, fucking right, I steal back and borrow. On a man, I be on my side. Click, click, bang, boom. There's blood on my pillow, and I know it was evil, but I'm down on my knees begging you to forgive me for the things that I've done, 'cause the devil made me do it.
That's a side, and I got your bitch on demon time. Cloud chaser, she won't top me off till I go live. Motorbike shorty, that's my mind. Do it in a section, fuck the line. Yeah, 666, I'm out in London, call them Austin Powers. And we fly them Sueys in here out from Broward. That head educated, probably went to Howard. Contemplating millions off a of cauliflower. After hours, give me till I sing.
Don't make me do it. I'm down on my knees begging you to forgive me for the things that I've done, 'cause the devil made me do it.
Rachel and Donald, hi, I'm
yes,
back.
Hello.
Sorry, that's even the most competent technical person couldn't work out what was going on there. So I'm sorry.
Oh,
we'll just continue with this. This is actually working, and hopefully the sound quality is not appalling. So I'm really sorry. My guess is that we didn't hear that first song at all. Yeah, it's the problem with, I guess, with Beagle Radio. We're all coming in. We've all got our own kind of devices and stuff like that, and sometimes they're not compatible. Yeah. Anyway, you know the story. If it's gonna, if it can go wrong on the day, it will. Anyway,
yes. Yeah. So both of us have had enough experience in the world of theatre to, you know, be able to be flexible about these kind of things.
Yeah, we've played some interesting folk clubs with some interesting sound setups in our time.
Have you? Okay. Yeah. So for the first song, you just tell us a bit about the song that you just played. The first one. Did you write? Who wrote that one? Who's the songwriter, or is it a kind of collaborative thing?
Well, becoming increasingly collaborative, but I think that one can definitely be credited to Donald, who's definitely got more of a history of songwriting than I do.
Yeah, when I was about kind of 14, 15, and I first started playing guitar, I got really frustrated that a lot of my friends were just so much better than me at that age, and I got really annoyed with the process of having to learn other people's songs, because learning other people's songs, I could never be as good as they were. So yeah. Rather than learning other people's songs, I just wrote my own, and then I was the best at those songs, clearly, because I'd written them.
Yeah.
And none of those songs were any good, but that just kind of got me into the way of writing songs as a way of practicing and making my own music. I've been writing my own songs for quite a while, and that song that we played that maybe people didn't hear, the Taken by the Sea, was inspired by the last job I had was actually at Te Papa, with the education team, with the learning team there. And one of the learning programs we did was a really cool program all about Polynesian navigation. And I was just really inspired by the stories of Pacific navigation. Mm. And I wanted to write an homage to those amazing journeys. And then a couple of years ago, actually the last time I was in Whangarei, I came up to be one of the volunteer crew on the replica endeavor.
I remember when that came in. I went to see it at the port
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it was such a wonderful experience traveling with the flotilla. And there was, because we got to hang out with all the Waka Haurua crew, and we had local iwi representatives on board the endeavor as well, who, as we were sailing along, were pointing out their landmarks and telling their stories of their whenua at the same time that Captain Cook came on his voyages. So right. It was kind of like a retelling of the history from an Indigenous perspective, as well as having this amazing time on boats. It was really awesome. Cool. So I got really inspired by all of that, and like sea shanties and that kind of like uproarious music is just really fun, and so that song kind of came out of all of that.
Right, cool. And Rachel, you're from Whangarei. You're born and bred.
Yeah. So my family moved out to the Tutukaka coast when I was 7, from the UK originally, and I grew up in Nunuru, and then went through my high school years in Whangarei. So. Mm. Yeah, I was thinking that I don't think I've probably played a gig since my, last Whangarei Youth Music Orchestra performance many years ago.
Oh, so you were in Whangarei Youth Music. Oh, it's funny because the next guest coming in is Hayley Douglas, whose mum used to run.
Good friend of mine. Childhood friend.
Oh, cool. That's how funny. Hey, looking at the time, and let's do another song. And you said you don't have much music online, but if you do have any, I'm happy to play some during the rest of the show. Are you on SoundCloud or anything like that? Or
no, we haven't really started on our recording journey yet. Do we have videos?
There's a couple of videos there on YouTube. We can send the link through to you and see if you can find out how to make that work.
We can easily play stuff off YouTube. It's just this live in the studio stuff that's a few glitches. Yeah. So you how long have you been in Wellington, Rachel?
Basically 10 years now.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. So that's kind of home now, is it?
Yeah, to a degree. I think I'm a person who feels home as many places.
Mm. Mm. So you've never played 116 before?
No.
No.
When I haven't really been spent much time back in Whangarei since 116 venue either. And it was a pipe dream when I was wrapping up. You know, NYT still had that loft on Bank Street.
Yeah, yeah. And when they've moved out of there now. But 116 is it's been going for about... I think about sort of 6-7 years, something like that. So it'd be great to have you here. So you're playing here on Saturday night.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah. All right, let's do another song, and then we'll have to wrap it up at 9:30. So what's this one about?
Yeah, so we're going to play a tune set for you next. I know I didn't get the song before. And it's called Upstart, and it's just a really fun kind of contemporary Scottish feel set.
Okay, when you're ready. That's real cheerful sort of sound. Sounds great. When you say it's a tune set, what does that exactly mean?
Well, it means, if you're listening, you might have noticed there were actually two different tunes in this.
I
this
did.
One is called Upstart, and the second one is called Platform 2.
Cool. Unfortunately, I don't think your microphone is doing you justice either, because it's coming through a bit. So when do you guys get up here? When do you arrive in Whangarei?
Saturday.
We're flying up. I think we get in at like 8 a.m. or something. It was a lot more affordable to fly up on Saturday morning than it was on Friday night. So we have fresh start for us.
So what time will you actually get to Whangarei? Are you flying straight here from?
Yeah, we're flying straight here. I think we get in about 8 or something.
8 in the morning. Yeah. In the morning.
In the morning.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you come in and play live in the studio that morning?
Okay.
I think we probably need to.
Because this really has not done you or anyone justice, this very compromised interview. But it's been great talking to you, and I'll email you and we'll set up a time for you to actually come in and bring your stomp box as well, because that sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, we'll have it with us.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So we're from 9 till 12.
I'll try to get back to you.
Yeah.
Cool. Just because we're going to be going back out to the coast probably.
Yeah.
So I'll try and if we can set up something close so that we don't have to make Dad sit around in town for too long.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, he can come into the studio and enjoy the music too. What's wrong with that? There's probably room.
Oh, yeah. He can do that.
Cool. All right. Look forward to meeting you in person on Saturday morning. Sorry this has been technically frustrating, but anyway, it's great that you're coming up, and I'll continue to promote the show throughout the week.
Great, cool. Thank you so much, David. Stay by to Haley for us.
I will. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, I'm really sorry about that. That was not ideal in terms of sound quality, and it really didn't do them justice. So that was Laldi, Rachel, and now I've forgotten the name. Shit. Gordon? No. Donald. I knew it was something Scottish. Rachel and Donald from Laldi. Okay, so we're all, as I said to them, we're all enthusiastic amateurs, and sometimes the tech challenges overwhelm us, but never mind. It was great having them on. And next up, we've got Hayley Douglas from Wildfire and Honey, or Honey and Wildfire, coming in. So let's get set up for that.
Improvise, man. It's not like playing at home by yourself.
Well, what can we do for you?
Kia ora and welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien. Sorry about the first half hour. It was a schmozzle. But, you know, that sometimes happens. You think, you know, that it'd be simple just to plug an aux cord into a laptop and everything will work fine, but no. Anyway, luckily there's no technical hitches in this section because there's no instruments, just a couple of people in the studio, Hayley Douglas and Vivi Taylor, who are here from Honey and Wildfire. They've got a gig here at 116 on Sunday the 9th, this Sunday at 6 p.m. along with King Tide. So welcome. So we were talking a bit before about the personnel in the band. So how many of you are there all together?
There's four of us all together. Mm-hmm. We also have Georgia May Russ and Winnie Edgar Booty, But Georgia had an appointment this morning that she couldn't put off, so she had to be elsewhere. And Winnie is not with us for this gig. She's got previous family.
Engagements. Unless face it, there isn't room for four people anyway.
No. Two's perfect.
Yeah. So instrument wise, how do you do that?
Well, we're mostly vocal. A lot of our music is about the harmonies. And we do have guitar. And when Winnie's around, we've also got ukulele and also a piano or accordion occasionally. But for this gig, it's going to be just guitar and vocals. Our big thing is about harmonies, vocal harmonies. Cool. So a lot of our music is playing on voice and how that communicates what we want to communicate.
Right. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been playing together?
But over a year, right?
I think it's almost, it's like a year and a half.
Yeah. Right.
I feel like, I came back from Christchurch last year.
Mm-hmm.
And beginning of last year. And then I was like, all these cool people were around, all my friends, like Vivi and Georgia and Winnie. And I was like, well, why don't we start a band?
Mm.
Because we're all singers and we're all, you know, one of the joys of music is playing with other people. So. For sure.
So what does the name sort of suggest about you? Because it's two quite opposite things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wildfire and honey. It's sort of sweetness and kind of danger and death and destruction.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to represent our sound a little bit.
Yeah.
It can be sort of a little bit...
It can be very sweet.
Yeah, very sweet, or it can be kind of a little bit more dark. And
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we start off with a song and tell us a little about what you're going to sing for us?
Okay. So because there is only two of us, it limits what we can sort of reveal of our set, because a lot of it requires at least three voices.
For sure.
So we thought we'd sing something that was similar to our sound, but works with the two voices. So it's an a cappella piece, which people may recognise because it's called The Parting Glass. It's a traditional Irish song. I think it's actually originally a drinking song, which is a bit about death.
Drinking song about death.
A drinking song about death.
Not even 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
On a Wednesday, but never mind. This is The Fringe, anything goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's Honey and Wildfire. And what was the song called again?
The Parting Glass.
The Parting Glass.
Yeah. Just find our note. Yeah.
Oh, all the money I spent it in good company, and all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me, and all I've done for want of wit to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all. And all.
This is one that we don't practice very often, so okay. It was like, what are we doing?
That's okay. Do you want to carry on or should we stop?
We can carry on. We'll carry on. We'll keep on going. We'll go on to the next verse.
Right.
I'll try and do a bit better this time. I'm quite nervous.
Lovely.
Yeah, me too. All right. Is it, are you finding it with our note?
And all.
That was so big. I got the words wrong the first time, and then we swapped.
That's okay.
Okay. All right.
Live radio.
Yeah.
Sorry. O or and?
Let's go. And. Let's go.
Okay.
And.
kind of a rehearsal and a performance. Yeah,
I feel like this is also the term. No, anyway. No, we're totally polished. Anyway.
Okay.
And all the comrades the dare I've had.
No, I'm all wobbly.
Sorry for my going away. And all the sweethearts the dare I've had would wish me one more day to stay. But since it falls unto my lot that I should rise and you should not, I'll gently rise and I'll softly call good night and joy be with you all. Good night and joy be with you all.
Wow, that's beautiful. Sort of sad but beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the key to singing a harmony?
Oh.
Because I've tried it a few times and it's so hard.
I think something that I still am learning is just being sure of your own voice.
Mm.
I think it's like, it's something that is quite interesting and challenging with the three of us with our, like, with, and Winnie as well, when Winnie's around, is that all of us have
really different tones.
Yeah. So when you're trying to pitch off of someone who has a different tone than you, and you're just like, oh, hang on, that sounds like it's higher on my voice, and then it's all out, and then you're just like, oh, okay. So you've got to readjust how you're hearing things, which I find quite interesting, and it is a challenge sometimes.
So you're describing it as a difference in tone, so it's not like one's a soprano and one's a... To be honest,
most of us have quite a similar range, so we probably are all kind of sort of mezzo-sopranos, altos anyway.
Right.
But yeah, we just have a very different tone of voice. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
So tell us a bit about you. What have you been up to, Vivi, since, you know, in the last 10 years?
Well, I sailed around the world with my dad.
For
2.5 years.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. I knew you lived on a boat, but I didn't realize you were...
Well, that was what started the boat craze, was my dad was like, oh, I've got a little bit of money now. I'm going to buy a boat and sail around the world. Do you want to come? And I was like, yes.
How old were you when that happened?
21, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just you and your dad?
Yeah, we took crew on and off, and some family members would like fly in for a voyage or two.
Mm-hmm.
My mum did join us for quite a lot of it as well.
Oh.
But she was sort of on and off the boat because she had work and stuff like that as well.
Wow, what an experience. I didn't know you'd done that. So which way did you go? There's only one way really, isn't there?
West. We went like up through the Red Sea and Suez Canal and stuff and into Mediterranean and then cross the Atlantic through Panama.
Wow. Yeah. Golly. So that's a great way to get into boats, is to do something like that. But
yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So once you got back from that, what happened?
I took about a year to like just find my feet again.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I have to live normal life now. I have to get a job. And I lived on land for a bit and then, bought a little boat, moved aboard. And
Are you still on board?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, Raven 26, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I live on a boat too, so full disclosure.
Yeah.
We could talk about that all day, but we're here to listen to music.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're back based in Whangarei now, or are you still up in the Bay of Islands? Or?
Up in the Bay of Islands, in Opua.
So is it a mission getting together to practice? When you're...
Yeah, with Georgia most of the time in Auckland.
And Winnie in
Auckland. And Winnie also in Auckland.
Yeah.
Vivi in Opua. It's like... We might get a practice in maybe once every 2 weeks, but generally it's like once a month.
Mm. So how many gigs have you played?
One. This is only our second.
Oh, that's cool. That's exciting. Have you seen King Tide at all? Have you heard them play?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, they're fab.
I haven't, so I'm really excited to hear
What
them.
Kind of music are they?
They're kind of, they do a mix. Summer's got the most amazing voice and does these, like, she's, they, sorry, are quite... I guess, rock and punk inspired. Oh. I feel like their voice is quite, it's amazing. Like, they played a Katie Tunstall song last time I heard them play, and I was just like, oh yeah, that's it. That's that quality. Oh. They've got this real, like, rocky kind of punky, but kind of soft, not too harsh, but and Luke's this, like, has incredible emotion in his voice and what he plays, and a lot of what they're doing for this is originals. Actually, I think it's all originals for this gig.
Right,
cool.
But yeah, they're seasoned musicians and performers, and I'm a little bit nervous about appearing next to them because they're kind of amazing. But
so you're appearing next to rather than supporting.
We're supporting. I think I'm not entirely. We actually haven't discussed how it's going to work, but there's the two of us playing. So. Whether it's them first or us first, we haven't talked about doing anything together, but maybe we will do a song together at the end or something. But
it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So what about another song? How many have you got?
We've probably got one more that we could do.
Okay.
Well,
let's do that now because we've got Kipling and Hawani kind of
waiting in the wings.
But we've got plenty of time, and there's no technical problems, because there's nothing to go wrong, so that's...
What was the second one we decided on?
Lay, lay, lay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I know this one. Like a round, sung
it
as a round.
It's sung as a round, but it was originally talked to me by Zoe Booty.
Yeah, me too.
I've done a little bit of research into the song, because I think it's quite interesting, is that it's actually a Jewish song. That during, I think it was during World War II, when they weren't allowed to use they were having to hide the use of their language, they were still singing their songs, but using sounds rather than words. Yeah. And so this is one of those.
So they would have replaced the lyrics with just the lay
sound? Yeah,
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so have you, Zoe's taught you songs, have you been, do you sing at the choir?
I haven't recently, but Zoe is kind of the reason that I've continued singing.
Mm.
Mary Britton started the choir out on the Tutukaka Coast years ago, and then Zoe took over at one point, and she's kind of the reason why, I got into world music and was, like, continuing on singing and just enjoying singing and singing with other people, and it's kind of, she took the pressure out of it being having to be perfect. It's just about doing it and the feeling that it gives and sharing that music with other people.
I was always amazed at the giant choir that she's run here that I used to join in. She could teach a bunch of people who weren't really, you know, performers to make something beautiful in quite a few a few minutes. And this song was a good example of that. You could just, like, you could almost start crying. It's so sort of beautiful and evocative.
Very emotive.
Okay, so what's it actually called?
I actually don't know what its actual name is. We call it Lay 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 because that is
the lyrics.
I don't actually know what the title is.
Right, let's hear it.
Okay, shall I start, or do you want me to start, or do you want to start?
I don't mind.
I'll start. Okay. Start. Right. Okay. Lay, 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 lay.
something about harmonies, isn't it? It's just so, I don't know, why is it so pleasing to our ear? It's just like, you know, it sends shivers down your spine. It's incredible. What are some performers or bands or things that use harmonies that you guys like?
Oh, okay. Well, we are massively inspired by the Waylon Jennies, who are
say that again.
The Waylon Jennies.
The Waylon Jennies.
Yeah. They're a Canadian-American band, three-piece female band, who focus on vocal harmonies. And they do some beautiful things. That's actually the Parting Glass that we sang earlier was an arrangement of theirs.
What's a great song by them that I can play later on in the show?
I was like, don't want to give away the ones that... Because we do use some of their ones, and they're like, we don't want to give away too much.
Is it the Waylon Jennings?
The Waylon, like as in wailing.
Oh,
but
Waylon.
With a,
okay,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, yep. Oh, Long Time Traveller is beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Great. I'll play that one later.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're all inspired by the Waylon Jennies.
Yeah, actually, funnily enough, we all, it resonates with all of us. We're all just like, we all listen to them all the time.
I think it's actually one, like, for me, they're the band that first got me actually trying to harmonise.
Oh.
Like, I listen to them and it just really, like, gets me. Their harmonies are so on point.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's really, really touched me. I was like, I want to do that.
What's that great song by the Spooky Men's Choir that Zoe taught us? Do you know that one? God, I'll have to play that one again. It's, I can't remember the title, but again, it's like a group of men standing around and just singing harmonies, and it's so beautiful.
Mm.
So
it's the same when you're in it. So the thing, like when you're hearing it, and when you like when you're singing it, and you get it, and you get those harmonies really tight, and then like when you're sitting in that feeling that between singers, it's really amazing.
Yeah.
an amazing feeling. It's one of the reasons why I actually don't like performing by myself.
Yeah.
Right.
It's there's just not the same satisfaction. Once you've felt that, you're just like, yes, I want this all the time.
I know, and it's so, you know, I was asking about harmonizing, and it's probably quite scary for some people, but actually it's not that difficult.
It depends on what it is, and it's one of those things that if you can do it really simply, like with Lay Lay Lay, where it is just a round.
Mm.
Again, it's that thing of holding on to what it is that you're singing, so you don't accidentally slip into what everyone else is singing, because that's very easy to do. But there are some really simple ways to harmonize, and it's so satisfying. Yeah.
I remember that song. It's called The Sweetest Kick by the Spooky Men's Choir.
Oh yes, I have heard that. Yeah,
and it's just you know, just great.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so you're playing your second gig here at 116, and you're going to be playing. Is it just you're just going to be playing without instruments? Are you going to be?
We will have a guitar, but we do a mixture of a cappella and accompanied songs, and we're also doing more than half our set is originals.
Oh,
yeah.
Who's written the songs?
The combination. So we've written some as a band, which was quite fun. We did some like fun songwriting experiments, and then worked on a few together, which has been pretty cool. And then there's a number of ones that I've done. So yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to actually be able to share our own stuff as well, not just.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. So yeah, and so Hayley, are you back in Whangarei for the foreseeable, or like
for the time being?
Not to pin you down, but we like to pin people down in Whangarei and make them stay.
Stay.
And hopefully, are you enjoying the Fringe?
Yes, I have. I think I've seen 4 shows so far.
Mm.
I've got booked in to see so many more.
What's the standout so far?
I thought it was really interesting. I went to see Access last night, which I thought was quite interesting. Just exploring how that made me feel. I think, I don't know, as a musician, one of the main things that I focus on with my music is feeling, and what is being able to give feel and portray emotion through my music. And I was just like, it was quite interesting just seeing emotion in front of me.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, and then how does that make me feel? I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. So have you seen any theatre or music or anything like that?
I'm trying to remember what
I've
seen.
You on the spot. Sorry, my brain was just blank when someone asked.
Yeah, I know,
Vivi, have you seen anything?
No, great? I've actually had to work heaps over Fringe. I'm really gutted.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping to get to a couple of shows, but yeah, we'll see what I'm actually able to get, because I have to drive down for the evening if I want to go and see something.
Are you working up in the Bay of Islands?
Yeah, I'm working at the cafe in the marina.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right.
Yeah.
The Marina Cafe, I think it's called, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Where all the cyclists come and go from the cycle trail? Is it that one?
Yeah, except the cycle trail is closed halfway down at the moment, so
no one is.
Which is really lame.
That's a shame. Mm. All right. Well, we better wrap this up. So you're going to be here at 6 p.m. on Sunday the 9th.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. For your second ever gig.
Second ever gig.
Are you going to be practicing hard before then?
Or we've got like all day today is going to be like.
Oh.
It's just focused on our trying to get this.
Get work things out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. We're so close. Yeah. It's going to be great. Just. Yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
Okay, yep. And tickets are $15 or $10, which is, we all keep saying it's cheap as chips. It's cheaper than going to the movies, mm-hmm. and you get two bands for that price.
Yeah,
and,
it's two-hour gig for, yeah.
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 Great, and the bar will be open. And,
yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Okay, well, great to have you in. Thanks for singing for us, and look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Fab.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
right.
Damien.
Cheers. Right, I'm going to play that song by the Wailing Jennies. Hopefully it works.
Ye fleeting charms of earth, farewell your springs of joy are dry. My soul now seeks another home, a brighter world on high. I'm a long time traveling here, traveling away from home. I'm a long time traveling here below to lay this body down. Farewell, kind friends whose tender care has long engaged my love. Your fond embrace I now exchange for better friends above. I'm a long time traveling here below. I'm a long time traveling away from home. I'm a long time traveling here below to lay this body down. I'm a long time traveling here below. I'm a long time traveling away from home. I'm a long time traveling here below to lay this body down. To
welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien. I'm with you from till 12 o'clock, and we're having a great morning now that some technical problems are behind us. Next up, we've got Kipling and Hoani, who are here this week, today at the Fringe After Dark at 6:30, and on Thursday tomorrow at 8 p.m. at Fringe After Dark with their show Intense Tiger Fist. And their blurb in the program says, we aren't sure why it's called that either, but there's something about it, right?
Yeah, there's a real energy to it. Like, we had a real big debate about what the name of the show, you know, was going to be, because it's really just a show that who we are. Mm. I really wanted Comedy Cowboys.
Yeah, but we've done too many cowboy things in the past, so we had to move on to another.
Yeah,
do you mean thing. Cowboy behavior or like cowboy named events?
We've done a few cowboy characters, a few cowboy jokes. We don't want to get pigeonholed or no. What's it called?
The cowboy behavior. That's just a lifestyle. That's something that we and it's on a day to day.
You can't
take the cowboy out of the boy.
But you're still modern cowboys, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
You're not... Oh yeah, we don't follow any of the rules.
There's no cattle involved. in the slightest.
That's a relief. Right.
And then, yeah, but we literally put both our names into a Wu-Tang Clan name generator, like how Childish Gambino came up with his name, yeah. And then came up with Intense Tiger Fist, which
captured the energy, I think, quite well. Yeah. I think, yeah.
It's sort of vaguely threatening, but then the word tiger kind of...
Well, there's nothing vague about it in our show. We're incredibly threatening.
Oh.
Yeah, so anybody that comes tonight... we're not going to threaten any audience members. Please
I think
come
it's quite
through.
A justice position. We're both very anxious, awkward people. And so, I don't know, I feel like Mild Kitten Claw would probably be a better, better name.
Mild Kitten Claw,
For the show, but honestly, the branding and the name of the show has like come out. We're really happy with how... I think, and it's sort of like inspired, just like, I think the energy of what we wanted with the show.
So how long have you guys been performing together?
A couple years, I would say. Like, obviously, it's just stand-up comedy, so you kind of do a lot of it on your own. But me and Kip have been around each other for, definitely 2 years, I'd say now.
Yeah, both of us started doing comedy in 2020, and then we sort of became, like, really good friends, like, as the years sort of, like, went on. And then... probably at the beginning of this year, where we both did the Wellington Fringe Festival, we'd both seen each other, and I approached Juani and was like, do you know what we should do? We should do a show together in the Fringes in the later in the year. And but also since then, we've also been doing a bunch of other like collaboration sort of other projects just besides stand-up. Like we did a show called Welly Tonight, which was like a fake talk
show. Tonight show, yeah. Yeah, it was like kind of like almost a parody.
Yeah, like a live talk show thing, yeah.
Like theatre or
kinda like in a mix in between of it, so it was live and it was planned kind of
yeah.
I think the looseness of it was something that was really fun about it, like it was quite sketch comedy character style. And then also now I've been working sort of like just like more and more kind of other little projects together, like it seems we just do a lot of writing and everything together. So it's really exciting to now actually kind of be finally doing this show.
Yeah, to actually be on the road and doing gigs as well. It's like it's very different energy, you know.
Yeah.
And like it's way more energy. I think just to be away from home just like makes you more excited to do things as well.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So Kipling, you're from up here. How long is it since you left? Like how long have you been away?
Oh my god, like 6 years or so. I left Whangarei and then I which is kind of crazy to think now coming back and the place is whole different. Like 116 and Beagle Radio is so different, you know, compared to, we used to be on the in this little dinghy upstairs attic on the
down on the riverside,
and now we're now we're in here.
When we moved, when 116 kind of opened up, it was like that room is a perfect place for a radio station, and it's it's cool. People keep turning up, like new people keep turning up. It kind of like has that energy to it. So what have you been up to since you left?
I didn't really do any, for those who don't know, I was like really involved in the theatre scene and everything back up here in Whangarei, and then I went down to Wellington and didn't do anything for years, and then...
What did you do in Wellington?
I did a degree in spatial design. I know, that makes me sound like I'm very employable.
Great.
Not employed, but very employable.
Yeah, that's good.
So if anybody out there has a space and you're like, oh, this is... so ugly,
but yeah,
Kip can come in
and, like, and ramp it up.
Yeah,
yeah, not this space. The space looking incredible.
We're on a zero budget anyway, so don't get any fancy ideas. All right, so you did a degree and then you
started doing stand up. And then kind of now is also sort of, I was talking to Hawani, like I used to do a bunch of playwriting and other things, like through a scripted stage group, which Damien, our host, used to run.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that play that we did about meerkats. Remember that Family of Meerkats play? Oh my god, that was so funny. You played the sort of the nervous brother meerkat, and you know, we just had a lot of fun. It was just like no filter, no censor.
There's so many, like, I love those short minute, 10 minute plays, and I kind of want to see if I can revitalize a little bit of that energy and back into it. So just doing stand up really has kind of just gotten me back into the creative scene a lot more since, you know, and realize like, I can actually do whatever, you know, like whenever you want and sort of try it out and muck around.
So where are you from, Hawani?
I'm from Lower Hutt.
Oh, okay. Don't you just say Wellington?
I don't know. If you were, because you can say Wellington, but if like, if you lived in Lower Hutt and then you lived in Wellington, you'd be like, oh, these are different cities.
You've moved to a different city.
Yeah, they're very close, but, like, they're different cities, you know? Like, sure. Yeah, it's just a thing. Is it weird if I add my meerkat fact? You guys brought up meerkats.
Oh,
and
please do.
Okay.
Very
so
appropriate.
I love this fact. Meerkats eat scorpions, right? But babies, they can't just, like, be smashing away scorpions. Like, they don't fight
baby meerkats.
Baby meerkats. Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby humans as well. But I suppose baby meerkats in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, so baby meerkats, they're usually given dead scorpions by their parents.
Right.
But they have to learn how to fight their own scorpions. But the parents don't want to just give the scorpions with that because they could kill them.
Yeah.
So the parents will remove the stingers from the scorpions, keep them alive, let the babies learn how to fight them like that. And then when they're good at that, then they'll bring scorpions with the stingers and then let the meerkats. And that's how they learn how to fight for their own food.
So they eat scorpions. It's good to know that something eats scorpions.
Oh, yeah.
Something's fighting the good fight for us.
Yeah. Oh, how come you know stuff like that? Have you just got a mind for random facts, or are you a meerkat?
No, so this, I actually learned, I do like a panel show down in Wellington called Don't Quit Your Day Job, where we just like, every show focuses on a new job, and it sees if comedians can actually do that job, you know, like if they can do a real world job. And the one was teachers, and I just did a little bit of research on if animals can ever be considered teachers. And that's what came up, is meerkats teaching.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, probably all sorts of animals teach their offspring how to do stuff, don't they?
Like, oh, yeah, there were a ton. Yeah, it didn't end up making the show.
There's too many facts. We found that you guys thought we were coming with jokes today. We're just coming with facts. Intense Tiger Fist really is just a mild education class.
It's just a fun fact.
It's just a fun fact show.
Oh, that sounds cool. So how does that, what's the format of the show? Is it recorded or like, is it live?
It's just a live show. So it's kind of like, it's sort of, you know, it's that QI sort of like 8 out of 10 cats sort of thing where you have a host and then you have the comedians on the side and it's like very bantery and it's very fun. But we also have an improv section.
Yeah, I'd describe it meets QI, meets hypothetical, meets 8 out of 10 cats.
Right.
Like,
okay.
Really bringing the silliness of, especially in the live room, like, kind of thing. And we have some really specialty improv performers that come in. And
wow.
So, like, the whole show, you're getting your absolute bang from your buck because, like, everything is kind of incorporated in it.
Yeah, but it's all the way in Wellington, and I know this radio station is only for fun today.
It's not? It's broadcasting on the internet, so the whole world is listening.
Oh.
There's the track, like, you can see if someone's listening in, like, from other places in the world.
You used to DJ on Beagle.
Yeah, I did.
I think there's a photo of you up there, actually.
Is there actually a photo of me?
I think there may be. I think I saw
that would
you
be
up
crazy.
There somewhere.
Oh, looks there's like they've taken it down.
There's a photo of Maeve. No, there is. Me in the Boys High uniform.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got something stuck on your forehead?
I think I do. I have a sticker and we're wearing Batman masks.
Yeah.
Because that was really good for the radio show, for us to be wearing a physical
mask.
Gag.
Yeah.
And one of the favorite things to do was for the high school students was just do loads of swearing because we don't have
any. I want you to know
some things never change.
I have since become like I host a show on Radioactive now in Wellington. So I have continued on my local radio school.
What sort of show do you do?
The show I do primarily is called Caffeine and Aspirin, which is it's a fortnightly, or like it happens weekly, and I take it over fortnightly. It's an interview based show with creatives, sort of like within the city. So I'll bring on during the Fringe Festival. It's nuts for us, but artists. We're bringing on musicians. We're bringing on theatre people. Bringing on comics. We're bringing on anyone who's got something to talk. And authors. Anyone who's got interesting stuff to talk about.
So Radioactive is like the Wellington equivalent of Beagle Radio.
Absolutely. Nice. Yeah, it's awesome. Like we, we're like the third listened to station in Wellington too. So like they're really into local radio down there. So super fun. And then I've also had the awesome opportunity to jump on and host like breakfast for a couple of weeks as well and do some stuff there when some of the hosts are out. So
how many, what's your average kind of listenership
of there? I think during we hit like online streams somewhere in around like on the weekend about like 2,000
wow
kind of things.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I don't know if people really listen to the radio so much anymore. Like
No, but in Wellington, like, we have a huge, like, kind of things of it. I'm not actually sure on our, like, direct broadcast numbers. I think at our peak listenership basis, we hit, like, 15,000 FM, like, point, like, on the week, in the morning sort of point. So it's great. It does quite well, like, in that, you know. And there's a really strong radioactive listener.
Right, base.
Base, yeah. Like, there's a big community sort of within that.
Right. Yeah, we're doing a really good job of advertising Wellington things right now.
advertising things that has no impact on our show.
Well, what should we talk about that will help to promote your show? I mean,
we're selling ourselves.
Tell us some more facts.
Do you have a more meerkat fact?
Do I have more meerkat facts? That was the only meerkat... Well, okay, I guess I do have one more meerkat fact, but I don't... No, it's not even a meerkat fact. It was like... I was watching a show where they were trying to find out things more about meerkats, because, like, meerkats have, like, these little... In the meerkat community, there's, like, different positions, so there'll be, like, the guard meerkats.
Oh.
So they had, like, a mechanical rattlesnake near to the meerkat...
Burrow.
Nice, because I was going to call it a house. Yeah.
Oh, you would have looked like a... That would have discredited it entirely.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem with a lot of my facts. They're half remembered.
Yeah, but, yeah. Anyway.
But they had this mechanical rattlesnake near to the meerkat house. So they chucked... So these meerkats, like, ran out, and they kind of, like... They sort of tried to threaten it with just, like, posturing a bit. But then the rattlesnake, because it was mechanical, it like made these little rattle moves, but it didn't actually go anywhere. So it's kind of like, you can find it on the internet, this really interesting thing of these brave meerkats, which is probably, if you're having a bad day, I think that's a good thing to do. So you brave meerkats kind of slowly getting closer to this rattle, like mechanical rattlesnake, because it's like not real, until they eventually like get so close that they like attack it a little bit, or they just kind of touch it and realize that it's not a real snake. Which isn't really a fact. It's more like a brighten up your day video, audio descriptive.
I was hoping that the meerkats then destroyed thousands of dollars of equipment. It took us years to make this mechanical rattlesnake, and then the meerkats horrifically murder and.
And in our meerkat play, the meerkats were getting picked off one by one by various predators like hawks and hyenas. And one of Kip's lines, I think, remember was. Something about he's like, I hate hyenas. You know, comes running back and is like crying because his sister's been
murdered by viciously by a hyena.
And then I think saves his sister from the sleazy uncle who's there to sort of.
Oh my god! Oh, yes.
Do you remember how sleazy Trent was?
There was a character in it who was just
made for
meerkat world. Not as you know the
it was relationship a replica of human.
Yeah, you know, society. I'm not gonna judge how meerkats decide to pick their partners or whatever. in a play played by a bunch of high school students was, you know, definitely edgy.
What, let's talk about other comedians that inspire you, because you had a couple of guys in the other day from Elevator Comedy, a guy called Gavin Hewitson.
Sent me a message today saying good luck, actually.
Gavin Hewitson's one of our great friends from down from Wellington, actually. Cool. He's a fantastic guy. And Thomas is hilarious as well.
He is. He didn't come across as a hilarious human being when I first met him.
No, he's quite odd.
He is odd. And then he came and he told the story about going to an orgy.
Yeah.
Have you heard that story?
Yes,
And it's like such a funny story. And I was like, is this part of your show? And he's like, no, that's just my life. And he's like, I was like, maybe as a comedian, you kind of have to go out there and have those experiences, because otherwise you're just going to talk about, you know, being whatever normal life is like. Anyway, you've got to hear that story if you haven't. I won't repeat it now. It's on a podcast if you want to listen. So who are your kind of go-to comedians? Like, who do you really love?
When I got into comedy, like, I wasn't actually a huge, like, started doing stand-up. I'd obviously seen some stand-up before, but, like, it was the live comics in Wellington that really inspired me.
Right.
And there's one in particular that I always think about, and he's one of the main influences of Wellington comedy, a guy, Jerome Chandrahassan. And he's absolutely phenomenal. So if you ever get a chance while down in Wellington, check out Jerome Chandrahassan. But probably, I guess, like, immediate known-name comedians. Within New Zealand, we've got Guy Montgomery. He's probably one of my favourite New Zealand comics at the moment. And Melanie Bracewell as well. Those two, I think, are absolutely killing the game at the moment.
Karyos?
Yeah. David Karyos is absolutely one of the guys that I think inspires a lot of both of our style of comedy.
Yeah, I remember, because sometimes we'll both do kind of a little bit out there things, but I remember seeing David Karyos in a show and being like, oh, whatever I'm doing, this is like 10x, you know, like, this is crazy. He's going...
Can you give an example? Like, what kind of... What's the...
David will do a joke where he goes, this is my impression of a mime who's just watched his entire family be horrifically murdered. And he'll grab a bunch of flour out of his pocket, rub it all over his face, and, like, go... Mime is about to, he's going to scream, and then just starts actually screaming horrifically, ah, my family has just been murdered in front of me. And like, David, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. It's called the Chorios effect, essentially. Like, he's so intense and amazing and exciting. And I think both of our style of comedy, like, we do, we try and not be just a guy standing up on stage with a microphone telling jokes. So, the really exciting part, whether it's just like really silly or like shifted a bit and like sort of, I don't know, like being a little bit unexpected with it as well.
Okay. Just the absurd a bit. Yeah.
Absurdity is the great line for it.
Right. So I was thinking, so have you been to Fringe After Dark yet?
No, we haven't checked out. We've seen videos of the room, but we haven't actually popped in yet to go see the room.
It's great. Like, I mean, they've just turned this old shop into, the, you know, they've got the velvet curtains and the stage with the mics. And I was like, feels quite sleazy. And they were like, "That's take that as a compliment."
comedy rooms should be a little bit like, you're worried that there's going to be someone selling watches in the back corner.
Yeah. And it's a shame that smoking's been banned, because it should really be like smoking,
hazed, like, entirely.
And Oliver, the guy, Ollie, do you know if you met Ollie?
We love Ollie,
How come you know him?
I've come up a couple of times to do stand up at the Hump Night All Right fortnightly show.
Where does that happen? Is that Butter Factory?
It happens at Roost now.
Oh, Roost. Okay.
Yes. So Lauren Fagan runs that, and with Ollie. That's a fantastic open mic show. I met Ollie, and then met him a couple of times since. He's one of the few guys that it's... there's actually like 7 of us at a former Whangarei Boys High School people, which is also cool, because that's Billy T. James's high school as well.
So it's a real, like, fuck-a-papa of comedy school. Totally.
We want to run a show which is, like, myself, Ollie Scripps, Anthony Crum, another great stand-up comic currently on Rings of Power.
He's doing great.
Sean Collier.
Sean Collier. His dad's, you know, his dad's business is next door.
Yeah.
He's like the denture repair guy.
Yeah.
It's like, some grows
it's great. I guess Toast... more FM host, Toast.
Is Toast strictly a comedian, or?
No, Toast does some other, obviously, radio kind of things, but he does do some stand-up stuff.
So you could get a show of all Whangarei born and
Born. Like the people, like the Billy T wannabe people, you know, like the next, I always describe myself as the 7th funniest comic to come out of Whangarei Boys High School, really.
Possibly true.
Probably, it's not true, you know, like.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's great that Ollie's running the comedy venue. I saw him the other night doing... They did that Dice show.
Yes.
And, it's hit and miss, because, you know, some people just... Whatever you call it when you die on stage, like your brain dries up and you have that, whatever it is, reptilian part of the brain shuts down. Totally. It's just like, I want to run away. Mm. Have you ever had that? Have you ever had a moment of death on stage? Tell us about yours, Hawani.
Well, one time, it wasn't even... I just, for some reason, I just thought everyone was being too mean to Kanye West. So I just went on stage and did this, like, quite long thing, being like, oh, we're being... You know, he's got bipolar disorder. We should at least be a little nicer to him. And there was, like... There was no jokes in there. It was just this incredibly awkward... And this was... I think this was, like, the week before the Fringe show that I was doing last year in Wellington. So I remember I did this incredibly, like, weird, just like defensive thing of Kanye West, which I've never done again.
Didn't work.
Yeah, and then the MC was like, you can see Kwani at his Fringe show later this week.
So what were you hoping? Were you hoping people would find it funny, or did you like...
I think I had one thing right at the end of it which I thought would twist it, but then while I was up there I was like, this isn't gonna happen. But
you could kind of feel you were losing them. Is that what, like, is that the feeling, like, where you're just not
getting... I never had them. Immediately they were turned off by the whole thing.
There's like a feeling when you realize, like, I think in the last year this has happened way less, because I think in last year we've done, I think we've, but we were saying yesterday, like, we probably each done like around 70 shows or something this year.
I don't know.
60 or 70, kind of.
Right. Like, that experience is helping you.
Totally. But you start to realize, like, when you write out a bit, if there's... And you can go on stage and go, oh, there's no jokes here. I have not written any, like, actual what a punchline, like, is. And, like, you can sit down like, you'll listen to someone do on stage and you'll be like, yeah, you haven't actually written any jokes in what you're talking. Like, they'll just tell a story that's mildly odd. Yeah. And then you'll be like, yeah, that's how that goes.
Stories tend to go for a long time. But there is something to be learned about, like, you know, especially on an open mic, because I think that's the thing that people will be like, oh, I can never do that. But, like, there is something about an open mic going as bad as it possibly could go and being okay. Like, just that experience of having the worst possible thing that could happen in that situation happen, and then being fine. Like, you when you go through it, it's like, it doesn't seem as big of a thing anymore.
Right.
I think you learn so much more when a joke doesn't go well.
Yeah.
Than, like, you do when it goes really, really well. Right. Like, because obviously if a joke's going really, really well, it's at the best point it's going to be.
Yeah.
Kind of, or, like, you've figured out something with there. But if a joke doesn't go well or something, you've found a pathway which you need to, like, now adapt to. And if the whole set bombs, like, which has happened to me a few times, when you're doing, especially earlier on, like, or you're just doing brand new material, like, you will hit a bomb, and it builds, every comedian, it's good, it builds hair on your chest.
I guess, and it's like Darwinian as well, like, if you know, it's the only way to find out, because I was asking Thomas and Gavin, how do you know you're funny, you know, and like,
Gavin will tell you.
I know Gavin's not low on self-confidence, but, you know, for someone like Thomas, it's like, and he was like, well, I was failing at my engineering degree and I just liked stand-up, so I decided to give it a go. And it's funny because we're watching the Dice Show, there were these six comedians up there, and the one I really enjoyed was this guy called Ed, who's a Pakistani guy, I don't know if you know him, I can't remember his second name, and he didn't look or come across as very funny, but he would go on these surreal flights of fancy that were just really enjoyable to kind of, he could just riff, and he kind of had the confidence to and the skill to keep reincorporating things. And I was like, yeah, he's a natural. I didn't.
You know, yeah, there's like there's moments where you see someone like go on and they're just like relaxed and they're just going, and here's the thing to take from this and here's the callback. And I think it's like, we were talking about this the other day. It's like, there's a moment when you're on stage when you're no longer actually thinking about what you're doing, you're just enjoying what you're doing. And you're just living in that moment kind of thing. So that's
probably when you're doing your best work as well.
Totally. Yeah. Like, you're upstage and you're not even like realizing, like thinking about the next material as like, oh, something you've got to do. It's just like a tool that you've got there to kind of.
And I guess that's true for any performance, really, like whether you're acting in a play or once you're confident in control of it, you can relax and enjoy it. And there's nothing worse than watching someone on stage who's clearly having a horrible time. Like, that's, I mean, it could, if you were kind of sadistic, you could enjoy it. But for me, it's like painful to. And at the Dice Show, I think it was the woman who runs the thing at Roost. She just had a nightmare.
Yeah,
she got given 6 minutes on the Cheers. The word Cheers,
like Cheers, like for drinking,
could be like Cheers, like, you know, or it could, and she just.
So it's an entirely improv. You have to go up there and improv.
The audience shouts out a topic. They roll the dice to see how many minutes you've got to improv on that topic for. She got 6 minutes on Cheers, and after about 10 seconds, she'd used up all her.
I mean, I haven't signed up to the show, but I'd love to kill it. But we're not doing it. Yeah. We're not doing it. So you wouldn't know. But
I'd get a few plants in there. Shout out, meerkats.
Yeah. There you go. We'd have it.
But you know, and what about? So we also were talking, because I was talking to Stephen Lyons afterwards, who was kind of the guy running that show, and I was like, what about? Because I did a bit of heckling at the beginning. I thought, well, we're at a comedy show; they expect heckling.
Yeah.
And there was this really drunk guy who was quite obnoxious, but he did say a few funny things, and it felt like when he left, he eventually got up and left, got the message, and they were a little bit like needed him to kind of keep playing off. Do you know what I mean? I felt like something had shifted.
So did he get kicked out?
No, he just left. He was so drunk.
I think there's a really good moment when, like, there's a balance, like, so obviously you have really drunk hecklers, which can be a hit and miss, like, totally. As a good MC or as a good comic, like, if you're able to find and build a relationship with the audience that they feel comfortable enough to talk at the right time, sort of thing. Yeah, well, you figure it out and you figure out that relationship. Obviously, you want people to have a drink and have a great time because it's comedy and it should be a little bit, you know, like,
loose and fun.
And
it definitely depends on that flow between the audience and the performer, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
You need some feedback from them as to whether it's working or not.
Yeah, of course.
Laughter shouldn't be the only response that you're getting. I love it if you get, like, there's sometimes I'll do a joke that I know will just make the audience go like, oh, you know, like kind of like feel bad. Yeah. Like I'll talk about, there was a bit that I used to do. It was just like my grandmother hadn't moved on in 8 years and that was embarrassing. And
my
people
haven't moved on.
Yeah. Well, my grandfather's been dead for 8 years and she's kind of, she's getting on my case. Okay. About not having a partner. She's been single 8 years.
Yeah. But so that's why I've come to Whangarei, to date Kipling's grandma.
Yeah, an eligible bachelor. I know, but like, it's funny, but it's very dark. And so like immediately like kind of pulls in, but then you have that reaction, which you can then, you know, switch and then pull something else out of, you know, like, but also as well, it's really great if you have, like other moments just of like audience things where if an audience feels comfortable enough to say something and then you can either jokingly shut them down or encourage it, you know, like if you're in control enough, you get the right way.
And Stephen was talking about that in terms of like curating an experience for the audience. I was like, I'd never really thought of it like that before. Like, he felt like his job was to make sure that everyone's having a good time and not let random elements take over. But what do you do in worst case scenario? Someone's trying to sabotage your show, trying to take you down, trying to
I don't think anyone is trying to sabotage. I think
they think they're hilarious.
Some people, there have been people who have come to shows. Do you remember the guy that came to a show and he was heckling through the first half, and then at the half break, somebody was saying that like, oh, he wasn't doing. He said that he wasn't doing his best stuff. Like
That's really good. Genuine. That's such a brutal roast. I've seen him have a way better nights of heckling.
Yeah, but that's why he came in with the intention of being like a funny heckler and was disappointed at himself for not being like on his top game.
You know, I mean, there's also like gong shows, which is like really brutal, you know, like to which.
What's the definition of a gong show?
So that's when the audience can
bang the gong to get you off.
Yeah. So and generally, it's really good. Like the audience should be like being like, ah, you know, like reacting really viscerally, and it should be wild and loose, and you have to control that. Like it's a challenge.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think of it. If this is a fair warning, if you're coming to a show and you're throwing your drink, probably going to be kicked out. But like I would never not encourage audiences to react, especially if the comedian's already talked to you. Like if a comedian's already like addressed you and talked to you, then but like we do because only one of us is on stage at a time. The other is with a gun,
right? So ready to go. Okay, so you got backup.
The intense, the mild kitten claw is going to come out, and watch out.
Hey, I thought to wrap up, it'd be good if we played a clip from one of your comedian. You know, do you know if there's anyone online that you could YouTube that we could chuck on? David Koryos, do you think he's on there?
David Koryos, yeah,
Maybe not him because he's quite a visual comedian.
Okay,
But maybe Guy Montgomery.
Guy Montgomery might have a great bit, on there to talk about.
It's interesting that he's so like. Why do you rate him? Like, why do you?
There's something about Guy that I really enjoy because he's very. I don't know how to describe it. He's.
I think he's found a way to get to his points really funny. No, that's just
Guy is someone who has a very silly voice. And and that's why I think I enjoy that. And when he's on stage, he looks like he's having a great time. And that's something that I figured that out. If I'm on stage and having a great time, I'm funnier.
Right. So he's got that kind of, I always feel like that confidence bordering on arrogance. Is that?
I would not say it's arrogance at all with Guy. Would you?
I don't know. He seems confident.
He seems confident. I wouldn't say it's arrogant. Like it's almost like he's sort of like oblivious in this weird way.
Right. About that kind of helps. I'm sure this isn't the Guy Montgomery we're talking about.
No,
right?
that's the guy.
This is Guy Montgomery.
That's that guy.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm getting confused with the other
Guy Williams.
Oh yeah.
There's actually another guy as well.
Who's the third guy?
Don't really know that guy.
Okay. He's there's so many guys.
Forks. Yeah, he's
guy
not Forks. He's not that
guy Forks.
And man, let me tell you.
Okay, so what should we choose? Is there one that springs to mind?
I don't know. I don't watch clips of
there's a news joke one.
How about Voting Stone? This would be appropriate because the local body elections are on.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's chuck it on and see what it sounds like. And because I've never really, I don't think I've come across this guy before. So this guy. So let's chuck him on and see what happens.
I voted today and I thought I was so excited to vote I thought I would do something quite silly, which was to preemptively celebrate the passing of the cannabis control referendum. I became mind-numbingly stoned and walked to my polling booth in the rain, which dampened my clothes, but not my spirits. And I got in there, and I was the only one there. 5 volunteers, 1 voter. I was the star, you know. The talk of the hall. My eyes were bleeding. And I smelled like a dog. But I went over and I gave them my easy vote card, and it really does make voting so easy. They asked me my full name and my address, and I absolutely aced it. I then went to leave, and they said, "No, sir, your vote." And they gave me my papers, and I was so excited to vote, and I went to the booth. I did my party vote, and I did my, the guy, some guy, I never heard of him in my life before, but I like him better than the other person. You know how it is with those ones. You're like, his name's better or whatever. And I just think New Conservative is such a funny name. I hope he gets in, yeah. Anyway, then I keep going down. I got to the big, the main course for me, the cannabis referendum. But I was so stoned. I was in such a frenzy. I was so worried I was going to be on the wrong side of history. Because the question's got like 2 or 3 sentences in it. And I was like, you guys are going to catch me out with a double negative. So I spent 10 minutes. And it was one of the 5 volunteers came over and said, "Are you okay?" And I promised, and I said, "Never better." And then, anyway, I did my civic duty. I voted, and I would encourage all of you to do the same. It really is so simple if you just let it be, you know.
Okay, that was Guy Montgomery. Is that representative of him, do you think?
I think that's a great bit. Yeah. We were just talking about his arrogance, and that's it. He definitely does have a bit of weird, cocky arrogance about him, but in a silly, goofy way.
Yeah.
Like, I reckon that's a really cool clip, because that's going to be something that wasn't like... That's not like a super crafted thing. That's like a very, like...
It's quite a natural, great bit. I love that bit. It's well crafted.
And it's kind of a story more than a joke with a punchline as well, isn't it? It's like a little.
And he's got little moments in there that are like the punchy bits.
You're not going to get me with a double negative.
It's
great. Okay, well, we better wrap this up because we've been going for half an hour, and it's been great to meet you two.
Yeah.
Let's just remind everyone when you guys are on. So you're on tonight at Fringe After Dark at 6:30, and tomorrow at 8 p.m. at Fringe After Dark.
Yeah, and if you're after a little discount on tickets, you can use code TIGER.
On Event Finder.
On Event Finder, yeah. Code TIGER to get a 20% discount on tickets. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's
we're cool. Very generous.
How did you...
Because we got our ticket price wrong in the poster, in the event thing, and so we changed it to try and...
So you want to go... 15-10 rather than...
We tried to make it a little bit later.
Well, that's very, very nice of you. So use the code TIGER on Event Finder to get a discount. Fantastic. All right, well, great to meet you, Kipling and Hoani. Well, great to meet you again, Kip, and great to meet you, Hoani.
Yeah, very nice.
Look forward to seeing your show. I'm hopefully come to... My show's opening tonight, so I'm going to be quite busy.
Oh, wait.
Tomorrow night.
Oh, no, I want to do a half-hour interview on your show, Dave.
Okay, well. it's called Like Sex...
Oh,
and it's a play by Nathan Joe, seems to be quite an up-and-coming playwright. He did a show called Scenes from a Yellow Peril at ATC this year.
Mm.
And it's got a cast of 7. And there are 7 scenes, and there are 2 people per scene, and 1 person stays on. So it's called a daisy chain format.
Ah.
So it's really funny, really sad, really...
While your show sounds great, but you should definitely come to our show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because in fact they don't clash. So how long will you guys be on?
We're on for an hour.
Okay. Well, you could easily go to Intense Tiger Fist tonight at 6:30.
What?
Then whoop, grab a Beam scooter and head up to the Octagon Theatre and catch
Shout
Live
out
Sex.
Beam. What a night! What a fantastic what a evening!
Out. Yeah. Mm. But you better be quick because we've nearly sold out.
Whoa!
Not That's a problem like... we've had.
Okay, well, sounds great, and I've enjoyed chatting to you, and good luck tonight, and I'll definitely be there tomorrow night. So.
Awesome. Cheers, awesome. David.
Thank Thanks you so very much.
When I was lame, just so you could make me tame, yes, you take away my mind, you take away the top of the tin. Of it, babe. I don't want it no more. I'd like to be free of it now. I don't want it no more.
Welcome back to Fringe Radio. I've got Matt here with me, and we're going to just quickly do a review of yesterday's shows. What did you see that you liked, Matt?
Well, actually, yesterday was terrible for me. I didn't see anything except I got to talk to everybody in the morning. But I understand that... I'll just turn me down a little bit. I understand that Pachakacha was fantastic.
Mm.
Sellout. There were people queuing at the door trying to get in and couldn't.
Yeah.
Actually, Laurel said to me this morning, we need to figure out a way to get Pachakacha back on in here. And I said, don't look at me.
Yeah.
Me and Dave are done.
Yep. Well, it's a great format. It's not... There were some issues with slides yesterday. Some of the slides were...
So that never happened on our watch.
No. I mean, it's fairly straightforward and a really enjoyable format.
You know that
if what you're watching doesn't float your boat, it's going to be gone in a few minutes.
Gone in 6 minutes, yeah.
And there were some real standouts. Verena Pshorn, you do pronounce the P apparently.
Yeah.
That she was great. I was just saying to her, she's here now, and her thing about live action role playing and being a nerd and Dungeons and Dragons and all that kind of stuff, it just was
landed.
Just a joy. She's great. And every time every time you do something, I'm like, wow, she's interesting. And keeps kind of coming out like with things like that. And there was Ron Takawa, who's the quilt maker. He was great. Really cool to see some of his stuff sort of up on the screen and have him talk about it. One particular one that was kind of based on women's experience in prison was really powerful. And there were a couple of young people from the Questionable Research.
Yep.
What is it? Questionable Research Laboratory or something?
That's kind of the kids' makerspace that Verena's involved with as well.
Is she?
Yeah.
I think Tiki High, is it? That's where they're based?
Yeah, well, and originally it was down in the old, on Rathbone Street, in that government building there, but I think they had free rent for a year, then had to move. So. Okay, so they're up at Tiki High now.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then Vincent Nathan stood up, and he's always good value. And he did a classic Vincent, like it was sort of a nostalgic thing about Whangarei and places that used to exist in Whangarei, like bizarre theme park type place. I can't remember what it's called.
But, up in Tikiponga, I remember that.
Was it called something like the Paradise or the
something like that? Yeah.
And you know, just funny and kind of trivial, and so that was great. There wasn't a great deal on yesterday. The Imaginarium got going.
Yep.
Have you been down there yet?
I haven't yet. No, I was trying to get down there yesterday and ran out of time. But I saw actually somebody had posted some video that they took of it with Meg. It was Meg had described yesterday's one with Mike that it was kind of domestic abuse, and I was a scene which sounded to me incredibly confrontational. But the video of it, Meg's in full clown, like with a clown wig and clown, and she is clearly distressed. And Mike's kind of this menacing presence to the side.
Uh-huh.
And she talked about this power dynamic and how she was portraying someone who was disempowered and getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And you looked at it, I was kind of looking at this video, which is only about 15, 20 seconds long, and go, oh, I feel uncomfortable looking at a video of it. So,
right.
Yeah. I think it.
What was the clown outfit saying?
I think maybe that was to, I mean, Laurel's big on that idea of of clowns and masks, and it actually brings out more when there's something almost distracting. You notice movement more, and so I guess it was that. But it looked amazing.
Yeah.
So
cool. cool. Yeah, they've really put some thought into it. I didn't really think it would be that kind of developed. I didn't realize it'd even be sort of narratives going. I thought it was more just like a fishbowl type.
No, it's incredible, the concept. Mm. So
great.
Yeah. So, and I think every day is different. So if you go once, you're not, and you go a second time, you're going to see something completely different. So
right. Must get down there. So there were also two performances of Access, one at 3 and one at 8:30, and that was an interesting, I would say, experiment.
Yep.
And format. It was free, and you could actually come and go. So you didn't. It wasn't like a performance where you sit down and watch the whole performance. And it basically consisted of the performer sitting opposite someone. It reminded me of that thing. The artist has left the. Do you remember that documentary by that famous performance artist woman whose name slipped my mind? Anyway, she's Marie something. Anyway, I'll look it up. She's sitting opposite people in a gallery space, and it's sort of quite intense, and you sit there for as long as you want. And the performer, Hamish, was you would sit down and you'd say the emotion that you wanted to kind of, I don't know, explore. And he would then sort of demonstrate that emotion or embody that emotion.
Right. And the way he described it, it was all physical. He didn't, there was no verbalizing, words, nothing.
No.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess as an experiment, I guess for some people, maybe it worked, maybe, but some people only sit there for a very brief period of time, which I don't know. There was no rules about how long you had to sit there or how, you know. And so I guess for me, I was sitting there thinking this is a very fringe moment.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Anything only goes. Yeah. Experiment. It's okay. It's, you know, success, failure. We don't really even apply those words. Maybe it's just happening. And so that was, interesting. And I made it to that and Pachakacha. So I felt quite, on a day when there was only five things on, I was glad I saw two of them. Anything today that you're looking forward to?
Well, going down to the Imaginarium this afternoon, and then there is a premiere of a piece at the Octagon tonight at 8 p.m. called Like Sex. I don't know if you know anything about it. Damo's a director, which I'm really excited about, actually. And I think, is it a full house? It's sold out?
Pretty much, but it's not hard to, 50 people capacity at the
Octagon. We don't talk about numbers, we just talk about that it's sold out.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think I was saying to the cast this morning on our little chat that the play is strong, so I feel like they just need to just relax and enjoy it. And I know first night you're on stage, it's all a bit overwhelming, and this was for me anyway, and for you. Your lines can just kind of evaporate spontaneously.
Yeah.
I think it's a strong play, and it's. I still enjoy watching it, so I think that's a good test. I'm not tired of it, even though I've probably seen it hundreds of times.
Yep.
So
there are still tickets online.
There are
for
still
that.
A few available, I think. Okay. Yep. But we've also got two performances at 116, and you can definitely still get tickets for them. We've still got over 100 to sell. I know we don't talk numbers, but so that will be great. And then we've also got, so the Imaginarium's on. Chopin's last tour is happening, and that is...
That's here, isn't it? At 6:30? Yep. At 116 at 6:30, there are definitely still tickets for that.
Yep, that's a one-person show about the life of Chopin. So... a story about Chopin's feelings, relationships, life, and music. So, I mean, I like Chopin, and the performer, Philip Orhi, his name is Orhi, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. He plays the piano on stage, so he's also a pianist, so he'll be performing some Chopin stuff. Then at 6:30, and having met them and chatted to them just now, I'm very motivated to go and see Kipling and Hoani's intense Tiger Fist comedy tour. So it's an hour of stand-up. I think they do half an hour each. Then Snowcock is on at 6:30 at the Octagon, and the performer's just about to come in and have a chat with us. And there's a Morris dancing workshop at, I guess that's probably, is that here?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's actually not on my list.
It's not on your list?
Unfortunately.
One day.
One day
you will be a Morris dancer. It's at Just Thrive. So Just Thrive, which is 50 John Street.
That's right, yeah.
So I've got Ben Caldwell is the performer's name for Snowcock. He's coming in at next to talk to us. Then Cicada are performing live at 116 at 8 p.m. And Pat Biss, who's the I think Cicada is a band, but Pat's the kind of main prime mover.
Yeah.
And we had them on. Do you remember we had Pat on our show when we on the No Show once on Beagle Radio?
We did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Pat used to be a Beagle DJ as well. Patty.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
And I love Cicada's blurb in the you can feel the humor underneath the it says another night of angst, obnoxious left wing soap boxing and broken strings.
Yeah. That's a very good definition.
Yeah.
I've seen Cicada a couple of times live here.
Right.
And yep, totally worth it.
Cool. And so at 8 p.m., you've got a choice. Well, Like Sex is on at 8 p.m., and there's also Open Mic Night at Fringe After Dark. And Open Mic Nights, according to Kipling and Hawani, is a great place to work out whether you're funny or not.
Yeah.
Sometimes the cost to the audience may be high, but...
They were saying they've got 22 people booked for it. So they reckon it's going to run over 3 hours.
For the open mic night?
Yeah.
They've got 22
people, yeah.
Oh, golly.
So that's either
that's a marathon.
Extraordinary or excruciating or a mix of both.
Yeah. I suppose like anything, it's probably got, you know, there'll probably be some moments that make it worth being there.
Yep.
And it's a great place to hang out. It's they've done it up really nicely, and you know, you kind of go up the back alley and enter, and it's all a little bit sleazy and what it's supposed to feel like in a fringe after dark club. So yeah, we're building up. Like the Saturday, like you were saying on your show yesterday, is
madness.
Incredible.
Yeah, it is.
That it's possible to have that many events in Whangarei.
It is. It's quite extraordinary.
So there's a few. There's tomorrow's probably about the same number of shows as today. Then Friday, there's probably about 15 shows. And then you said Saturday something like
30 or something. Yeah, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. So we're building up to the kind of you know, the climax of Fringe this weekend, I guess. And then next week there's all still heaps to go. So it's quite overwhelming how much there is.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It's amazing.
And we just need people to get out there and,
yes,
and go to stuff. You
do
know?
Do support. Yep.
This is it. This is, you know, got to make the most, because once it's over, we'll be back to, you know, back to normal slim pickings, which is what we have in Whangarei, because it's just of where we are and the size of the town. So big appreciation, I think, to the Fringe crew who make this happen, and Haley and Laurel and Kate and Mary and Verena and, you know, all the people in the Fringe team, Derek, who are working tirelessly and looking fairly exhausted. But
they are looking exhausted. They are but exhausted.
Yeah. So it's great that we've got that energy and commitment to doing stuff like this. Okay, right. That's our little review and preview. So we'll leave it there. We'll chuck... Actually, I'm going to play a Cicada song, because Pat's here and said that the new album is out, so it's called Separate Ways, and this song is called the first song on the album. It's quite a short one, so maybe we'll play Another Disclaimer and Pistols at Dawn.
A book by Zizek, blank paper and a pen. An untrained voice and a guitar. Self-righteous anger, self-pity left on red. It's all I've ever needed to get through life thus far. And it's out with the old, farewell to the new. And a desperate hope my living heroes have forgotten how to sue. No one needs more of this bullshit, but it's all I know how to do. Just have to hope some of you don't realize that that's true. Sad confession that no one is going to hear. A hammer, a sickle, a dead brick wall. that desperate begging for an audience's ears. Oh, I swear that I'm not country, I just don't know that many chords. Well, you told him that you'd always known that none of this was real, that there's nothing that's outside your head you could touch or taste or steal. And he asked you as honest as he could, yeah, well, did you dream up me? Could someone as lovely as yourself such an ugliness dream? And you grabbed him by your teeth and took him dancing, and you showed him just what details you'd imagined, and you left while he was sleeping. You were walking home in the late dawn as the sun got in your eyes. You're up to try and get it out and just smudged your disguise. As you crawled back to the flat you share with seven other men, each one of them with the same face, just one name paying rent. And you pulled all of the curtains closed to keep him out the house, and you wash him out your eyes and clothes as you start to come down. And there are no sounds and no one's here to hear them as you curl up, fall and fade out of existence. And your dream carries on without you as you're sleeping. And you'll be out again some other night to take some more advantage. You'll never get the details right, sometimes that's just how it's happened. And you're never sure what wrong could mean or what median you're walking. But you read somewhere that it'd be alright if Sisyphus enjoyed it. So you roll that stone up just to watch it tumble. And you crawl back down so careful not to stumble. As you leave, there's yet another frightened boy's left sleeping. And you'll never take them back to see the place you hid your heart. Your place or thine, you've said so much, yeah, the other option's hard. And you'll see a thousand new rooms before the boulder wears to sand. And you find there's no remainders save for the scratches on your hand. And you're wondering whether all of this was worth it. And you won't quite know what next you'll be deserving as your dream leaves you behind while you are sleeping.
Kia ora and welcome back to Fringe Radio. It's nearly 11 o'clock, and we've got Ben Tito Caldwell in the studio. Did I get that right?
You did. Thanks, okay. Damien.
we were just talking, because I'd written it wrong on the schedule, and Ben, you were saying your stage name used to be Tito? Just Tito?
Yeah, I used to go by Just Tito, and it felt a little bit pretentious, but then I got introduced a few times as Ben Caldwell, and that didn't seem right either.
Right.
I've been known as Tito since I was about 13. I grew up in Taranaki, and there was a rugby player called Paul Tito with ginger hair like me, and so that kind of I got made redundant from a job one time, and they were handing out letters to people, and they called out Ben, and everybody looked around and goes, who the hell is Ben? And they didn't realise that was my actual name. So
right, well, they were handing out the redundancy letters.
Yep. Yeah,
that doesn't sound very
Oh, this is
nice way to fire people.
No, it was a terrible way of doing it, but at least it was quick.
Right, was this way back in your career? Like,
yeah, this was not long after I got out of university. So I went to university. I studied to begin with to be a journalist. I wanted to go into sports journalism.
Oh.
I got halfway through my second year and decided that I didn't really want to do it.
Mm.
But out of university, I came up with a communications degree, and like most communications graduates, I ended up labouring.
Well, do you know who else is a communications graduate?
You?
Jacinda Ardern.
Oh, yes. I remember Jacinda Ardern doing a talk at the New Zealand Universities Association conference, because I was a delegate for a time.
Right.
Yeah, so...
you said a common outcome for a communications degree is you end up as a builder's labourer.
Yeah, labourer, you know, barista.
Yeah.
All sorts of manual labour jobs. So, no, it wasn't... It was a job that sort of held me over for a bit.
Yeah.
And I've worked in all sorts of jobs. You know, I had a job for a while as a sex toy product tester, having to write reviews for online reviews.
What, like test them and then write a review?
Yeah. Oh. So I used to get paid to do that, which was really cool.
Sounds like an interesting job. What was that like for a company that sold them, or like a...
Yeah, so my friend worked for a company that used to make products and basically said, we've got lots of female writers, but we don't have any males. Would you be interested in doing it? And so at the time, I was studying creative writing and things like that. And so yeah, it was like $20 a review, which for a student at the time was pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the testing wasn't terrible either.
No. Yeah, it was just a shame I was single at the time. But yeah, it would have been nice to have
had a partner to
have
a testing. But were you testing the male, if you don't mind talking about it, the male sex toys or the
So I didn't do too many like actual toys, but supplements and stuff like So, but the general toys, you know, sort of the male toys,
right? Which, you know, my understanding is fleshlights. Are they pretty much, is that what we're talking about in terms of male toys? Or
yeah, kind of like that. And rather concerningly, some of them were being sold as dishwasher proof, which... Not
dishwasher proof fleshlights.
Yeah.
So what, you when you finished with it, you put it in the dishwasher?
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
It's, you'd think that would clog up the drains and the filters and everything. So.
Well, you think you wouldn't want to wash your dishes with your fleshlight either?
No.
Probably.
Well, there is that too. But I mean, yeah.
Classic. So, so it sounds like you've had an interesting career. Lots of different jobs. Quite a good training ground for being a stand-up, would you say? Or
yeah, absolutely. Mm. So my career in comedy has been about 14 years now, and so you go through phases where you talk about different things, but one of the constant things that you do end up talking about is your employment.
Mm.
And that's kind of where this show also happens to, you know, include that, because the reason why it came about is because I got a new job with Manawatu District Council, and within my first week of the job, I made a social media faux pas that went viral, and it's now what I'm most known for.
So what was the job? Like, what was the actual thing you were...
Communications officer for Manawatu District Council.
Right. Yep. So the communication you were putting out was so, about what?
So there was a snow weather warning for our part of the district.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was asked by a colleague of mine, hey, can you put something up? Just letting people know that it's not
on the council website, sort of thing.
On the council Facebook page.
A Facebook page, right.
And so I was like, yeah, no worries, I can do that. So I typed up the post, and I thought, oh, I may as well put a visual with this. So I went onto the Met Service website, and just where I snipped out the area for our district, it just happened to look phallic shaped.
What, the shape of the
warning area?
Oh,
yeah, the shape of the warning area. And all sorts of different things lead it to looking like, can I say a penis? Or?
Yeah, you can say anything on Beagle Radio. Luckily, we have no advertisers to offend.
Cool. Yeah.
So you can say swearing's fine, talking about sex toys is fine.
I should have checked that before. But it looked like a penis.
Yeah.
And I put it up. And by the time me and my bosses realised what had happened, it had been up for a few hours, and had already gained a lot of traction on social media with lots of comments and lots of funny memes and post reactions and everything.
So how did that happen? Because I'm guessing the Manawatu, what is it, District Council website wouldn't get a lot of hits normally.
No, so...
Oh, Facebook page, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so we gained about 1,000 followers in 24 hours.
Which is a good outcome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they the right kind of followers, or...?
Well, a lot of them were actually from overseas. A lot of them were actually from overseas. Yeah, so... but yeah, it worked out well for us, and for want of a better term, we've milked it ever since. Because I'm quite well known now.
Are you still working for the?
I'm still working for the council. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Right. So
you're probably a bit of a sort of celebrity. You know, you're the guy who.
Yeah. So whenever we have to post other council warnings for,
weather events,
a lot of people comment and say, "Oh, is Ben not doing the post today?"
Right. Okay. So how long have you had the job? How long have you been there?
Just over 2 years.
Right. So so it didn't, you know, it wasn't like a sackable offence, or it was a genuine mistake, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
yeah. It was a genuine mistake. And and what was good about it is the CE at the time, they said that the executive team, management team, got together and talked about whether or not they were going to take it down.
Mm.
And he said, no, we'll leave it up. More people will see it that way.
We'll see the warning.
Yeah, see the warning. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's also, I don't know, it feels like there's an element of kind of New Zealand, you know, I'm thinking of, say, the flag debate, where do you remember that flag that someone designed with the Kiwi with the laser beam
Kiwi
on?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think, you know, I like the idea that we can, I think we're known as a nation with a sense of humour. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that is changing. I definitely think that previously we've been known to be sort of, not having a great sense of humour, maybe like a dry sense of humour. And I think we still have, you know, that perception outside of New Zealand. But within New Zealand, yeah. What was brilliant about it for our council is that, you know, I'm sure you have it up here locally with your own council as well, is that it's kind of seen to be like very serious, very straight-laced and everything like that.
Yeah,
For me and my day job, it sort of resonated with me that, okay, we can actually be funny. We can do...
Right.
We can push the limits a little bit.
Yeah.
And
that's got to be a good way to engage. I mean, obviously, you've got 1,000 followers within 24 hours, so it's...
And we look at doing other things. We know that within the Manawatu district, there's quite a rural population anyway.
Mm.
And so, you know, there's only so much that you can do without them thinking that it's cringe. So, you know, we just try and put in some subtle bits of humour every now and again. But, that was a real eye-opener for me, is that it can open doors and humanise council organisations and government organisations by using things like this. And
yeah, because otherwise, you're right, they can seem quite faceless and bureaucratic and dull.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's the local body elections on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, voter engagement is at an all-time low, according to what I've read. You know, it's not, I don't know if it's the same in Manawatu, but up here it's... you know, not great. So it's definitely something that people struggle to care about, I think, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, we're doing the elections campaign with Manawatu District at the moment. Mm. And as of yesterday, we jumped ahead of comparatively where we were in 2019 for the percentage. Oh. Not by much, you know, but like a percent or something. But me and my bosses, we were discussing about, or my colleagues and the team, we were discussing about how we could have sort of like targeted the young people, and we were talking about what we should have done is like we should have gone out and said, oh, you know what a really nice number to aim for in terms of the percentage would be 69.
Sex again, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard to, it's sex sells, it's always been a thing, hasn't it? But I think with mixed with humour as well, it definitely appeals. So, all right, so you've been a stand-up for 14 years, you said?
Yeah, so I started in 2008, and in November it'll be, 15 years in November.
Wow, so that's quite a career. And what are some high points from that for you, like when you think about your career?
Heaps. I won't go through too many. I got in 2014. I got to perform at Late Laughs in the comedy festival at in Wellington at Sanford and Bathhouse.
Right.
And that was in front of about 200 people in the venue.
Wow.
And James Acaster was on the bill.
Cool.
As well, which was a nice little claim for fame for me.
Wow.
But more recently, my highlights have actually been, I'm really passionate about comedy within regional New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
So I'm living in Fielding and running shows in places like Foxton Beach, Whanganui, helping assist House of Laughs in New Plymouth, and taking shows to a lot of regional towns that haven't necessarily had a lot of comedy before.
Great.
And so the highlights for me are taking shows to venues and towns like Upanaki and Fielding and Martin and places like that don't get a lot of comedy.
Yeah, don't get a lot of anything.
Yeah, don't get a lot of anything. Yeah, yeah, you're right. And
where do you perform in those sort of places?
Try and go for, it depends. It's a mixture of bars and theatres.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, bars that have a separate space to where the main clientele are good.
Yeah.
Theatres are equally as good, but sometimes with theatres you're having to pay in order to use them.
Yeah.
Which
margins are probably not amazing in this. No one's getting rich.
No one's getting rich. No. I try and pay people fairly and guild rates. It's one of these things where for me it's not about the money, it's actually just getting out and enjoying the experience. And I've got 6 kids at home as well. Yeah, with my wife. So it can cause a little bit of tension going away.
Sure, because it's not really kid friendly, is it?
No.
Stand up generally is in bars with, you know, which by necessity have to be R18.
Yeah. So I can't exactly bring the kids along with me, particularly to a show like this.
How old are your kids?
13 through to 2. My 3 oldest children all have special needs as well.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So that presents itself with challenges.
Yeah.
That's
a lot to handle. 6 kids with 3 with learning difficulties on top of that.
Yeah. And so the show covers a little bit about the background to the post, which is we were in lockdown at the time when I applied for the job. So I talk about the lockdown experience as well, being at home with 6 kids and then leading to the post itself. So so it's not just one hour long penis joke.
right. So there's sort of lots of context and background and okay. I guess, you know, you never would have anticipated that post could have given rise to a show like this. Before that happened, before this show, did you have other shows, or were you just doing stand up with kind of like rotating material? Or
I've done 3 solo shows previously.
Right.
The last one was about the lockdown experience, and so what I've done is I've taken the bulk of the really good material from that and put it into this show, which is like the first 20 minutes or so.
Right.
And then prior to that, I did a show called Stepping Up, which was about me becoming a parent. So when I say I've got 6 kids, I do have 6 kids, but my 3 oldest children aren't biologically mine.
Right.
And so I gained 5 children within 3.5 years. So that was that experience.
There's a lot of stepping up required by the sounds of it.
Yeah. And so, but it talks about, you know, becoming a dad to 5 kids at the time.
Yeah.
But also I went through a mental breakdown, because there was so much change that happened within such a short space of time.
Yeah.
So I talk about how I recovered from that.
Oh wow.
So that was a show. And then the first show I did was called A Sporting Chance, which was about sport.
So you said you have an interest in sport from wanting to be a sports journalist at some point.
Yeah.
What kind of sport are you interested in?
I play football for Fielding United.
In
Fielding for the Seagulls, the Mighty Seagulls. really enjoy playing football. I used to be a rugby player up until about 6 years ago, and then I tore my ACL and my knee. Rugby's not quite for me anymore.
Mm.
So yeah, been playing football ever since and have really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Like comedy, sport is important for my mental health.
Comedy is important for your mental health?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, because it all comes from my own personal experience as well. You know, I'm not a particularly observational comedian, you know, and I'm not a prolific writer of material.
Uh-huh.
Basically, if something doesn't happen to me, then I don't I don't go out of my way to write about things
okay.
unless there's something that really sort of like triggers me and thinks I can do something on that.
So how do you talk about, as I'm thinking about Mike King, who's a strong advocate for you know, mental health, he's I think he's a Northlander, and you know, how do you talk about, so you talk about in that show that you were talking about stepping up, you had talked about your own mental health challenges. How do you do that in an amusing way?
I think that it's actually quite easy because, like, the opposite of tragedy is comedy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I suppose, think of it as a taboo thing, but lots of funny things happen when you're in moments of despair or desperation. I remember, so my breakdown was quite public and that happened at work.
Oh.
And my boss came on in and was like asking questions, and I was in absolute tears, just breaking down in front of her.
Yeah.
And she goes, look, I think we're going to have to send you home. And I remember saying to her, oh, no, please don't do that. That's where I'm stressed the most.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You know, so just elements like that where, like, you know, you can find those little nuggets of really funny things. And I remember, you know, in that show I talk about, I was absolutely screaming at the TV one day at one of the kids' cartoons that I was watching. With the kids, I was just screaming because I thought that what the kids were learning from this cartoon was just completely wrong and immoral.
Yeah.
And it was after that screaming I realised probably have a mental health condition.
Oh, so, really? I realised you were kind of in a good place. I see. So, what do you like about stand-up? Like, what's the sort of, what do you enjoy about it? What's the kind of...
Just making people laugh.
Yeah.
You know, there's no better feeling than making somebody laugh, because you feel in some ways that you've helped someone.
Yeah.
There's other ways that you can help people, but just giving somebody a laugh, you know, that is really, really powerful. And I think that there's a lot of lessons that people can learn from watching comedy or even doing comedy is that you have to open yourself up to vulnerability. And, you know, you're effectively telling the audience that you are the funniest person on stage, or you're the funniest person in the room at the stage. And that is an incredibly powerful thing to say, but it's also an incredibly vulnerable thing to say, because, you know, you're competing with like maybe 50, 60 other people in the room, or however many other people are in the room. And you're giving trust to the audience to say, okay, this is my story, or this is my set, this is my material, and I'm going to trust you with it. And for the most part, it's been really rewarding in that sense, because you tend to find that people accept that you're being vulnerable at that stage, and they're a lot more forgiving.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was talking with Kipling and Hawani, who were in here before, who are doing a show tonight as well. And, you know, we were talking about because you're exposing yourself, you're vulnerable, and, you know, the relationship with the audience in comedy, there's an element of, I don't know, not what we call it heckling, but, you know, audience feedback seems to be quite important.
Yeah.
So when it goes wrong, what's going wrong? Is it that there's someone out of control in the audience, or give us an example of something where it's maybe not gone so well, you know what I mean? Because there must be days when it doesn't feel...
Yeah, no, there definitely has been. I remember I did a show in Otaki, and I wasn't on stage when it happened. I was off stage, but I can talk about it from that perspective, and that there was a group of people in the audience that they were just like talking the whole way through. And heckling's not so bad, because in New Zealand, hecklers are doing it for two reasons. One, they think that they're trying to help.
Yeah.
Or one, they think that they've got something funny to say.
Yeah.
And you can work with that. But the ones that are really annoying are the ones that just sit in the audience and just talk.
Right.
And they're not paying attention, and that detracts and distracts the other people around.
And it's just rude.
Yeah, and it is. And in the end, you're an idiot, because you've paid $20 to see a show, and then all you end up doing is talking to yourselves. You could have just done that at home.
Exactly, yeah.
But these people were talking, and it got to a stage where, like, I told them to get out of the venue because they were talking so much and they wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
And this woman had been drinking quite a bit, and her boyfriend came on out, and she was going, "You're not funny. You're not funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. You, what are you doing? Nah, you're not funny." Yeah. And then he interrupts. The boyfriend interrupts. He goes, "Oh, no, bro. I thought you were really funny." And she turns around and smacks him.
Oh, no. So smacked him for taking your side.
I genuinely thought I was about to get thumped by this woman, and she turns around and slaps her boyfriend.
Oh,
because he agreed that I was funny.
That's hilarious.
So, I mean, there's a general rule that you sort of give people three warnings, and the warnings get progressively stronger each time.
Yeah.
But, you just got to recognize, like, how hard you go with that first warning. Like, and generally speaking in New Zealand with audiences is if you go too hard too soon, then the audience will not be on your side.
Yeah.
They'll go to their side.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you've got to sort of just string them along a little bit,
Play
along, and then, you know, bring it back to...
Because it's a slightly different relationship with the audience, isn't it? Like, if you go and see a play or something, there's an understanding that, you know, you as an audience person, you're there just to receive the show.
But
there's a kind of the interplay with the... Mm. You know, I was watching a show at the Fringe After Dark the other night where there was a drunk guy, and when he finally got up and left, they almost seemed a little bit, not at loss, but, like, the banter had kind of, you know... but then I asked the guy afterwards, and he said, "No, that guy was a liability. He was in danger of hijacking the night, you know, because he was so drunk." So you've got to be careful that you kind of pitch it right. You don't go in too hard and too kind of aggressively.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, if you go in too aggressively, then the audience will turn on you, and they'll think, "Oh, you know, he's just trying to have fun. He's trying to help you."
Yeah.
And you get lots of people like that they think that they're helping, and sometimes it does. You know, you get some comedians out there that they don't want anybody talking to them. All they want to hear is laughter, and you know, they're not wrong for feeling that way.
But
whereas I'm a little bit more open. Like I don't think that I'm particularly great at crowd work, but if it happens, then I've got to be able to roll with it and bounce with it, and performing in front of small audiences helps you with that.
Yeah, for sure. So just to wrap this up, tell us a comedian or a few comedians that are your kind of inspirations or your go-tos. Like, who do you enjoy?
Billy Connolly was my first inspiration.
Yeah. What do you like about him?
So I grew up with a Scottish dad and an Irish mother.
Right.
Hence the red hair.
Uh-huh.
Just the storytelling aspect of his comedy.
Right.
I could relate to a lot of what he talked about because of stuff that happened within my own family.
Right.
In terms of, like, you know, drunk aunties and uncles singing and, you know, their funny characteristics and stuff like that.
So would you say he's a storytelling stand-up comedian? Yeah. Like his show structured around stories.
It's definitely structured around stories, but it was important for me as well, watching his stuff and realizing later on, maybe when I was moving too much towards story, is that he still throws out these nuggets every now and again to retain the interest, you know.
Yeah.
it's not all just about, you know, telling a story.
Yeah.
there's little bits and things and varying and different directions before coming back, you know.
And also his slightly manic kind of manner is also quite sort of his kind of trademark, isn't it?
He has the quote, "Live life with your knickers down," talking about being vulnerable on stage.
Right.
You know, you're funnier when you have your knickers down, so I'll try and live by that motto as well.
Interesting.
In terms of other comedians, Brendan Lovegrove's I've worked with Brendan a few times, and he's a really big support of me. There's a fantastic comedian coming out of Whanganui who everyone should look out for, Cajun Brooking.
What's their name?
Cajun Brooking.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's going to be a star.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Interesting.
Lots of other comedians. Way too many to name. But,
okay, so you're a fan. You're definitely a fan of, you'd watch comedy yourself. Like
I prefer going along for the live experience.
Yeah.
So I say this to a lot of people, is that watching comedy on TV or on Netflix or anything like that is like watching a sanitized version of what you actually see on the stage.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend getting along and checking out some of the comedy that's on at the Fringe Festival.
For sure.
Please come along to my show.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got tonight Kipling and Hawani's Intense Tiger Fest at the Fringe After Dark, and Snowcock tonight at 6:30 at the Octagon, and then again tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m. at Fringe After Dark. And you mentioned Brendan Lovegrove. He's also coming up. He'll be here on Thursday the 13th and Friday the 14th of October at Fringe After Dark. I've seen him, and he can be pretty ferocious. But, yeah, I guess that's... we've got lots of comedy, lots of music, and lots of theatre. And probably like any town that has a Fringe Festival, we're suddenly overwhelmed with things to do, and I think we're slightly in shock. But we're getting there. It's a nice problem to have.
Yeah.
Anyway, really good to meet you, Ben Tito Caldwell. Thanks for coming in. And I'll probably, if I catch Snowcock, it'll be tomorrow, because I'm going to be preoccupied today with... we're coming in straight after you. So thanks for coming in. Good to meet you. And we'll play another song from Cicada just to for the transition. This is called New Friends.
Five minutes. All right. Dust's moving out, but you're moving in. Yeah, we're moving in. And you'll buy new toys, blister packaged $2 joys, better than the ones you broke before. And when they die, you can buy more. Ready for the world, man, it's all on the shelves. So in stores. And they'll prescribe new drugs, new features, the same old bugs, better than the ones prescribed before. Kill off the remnants of war. Kill off your monotone and scroll and every other feeling too. And you'll dream new dreams. America, baseball, ice cream. You'll lick it off the silver screen. Decide that's all you want to be. Know that you've seen all there is to see without ever looking hard. And so you'll be just like that empty room, that rusted bike, built for a purpose time forgot, around some load-bearing terminal rock. You are filled with potential. It's a shame you were not full of any substance.
Welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien, here till 12. We've had some great guests on today, and if you missed it, you can go to the after. Give us a little while, but Ursula is uploading the
what would you call it, schedule, set list, whatever you call a show list, and putting it on the Beagle Radio website under the Fringe Radio show page, and you can just find the spot that you want to listen to and play it back. So thanks a lot for doing that, Ursula and Dave, great remote technical support, and thanks to Matt for coming in and trying to bail me out this morning when I had a technical nightmare. So since then, it's gone really well. And next up in the studio, we have Pat Biss. Is that what you go by?
Yeah, usually.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Welcome back. Pat's been in this studio before, notably as a Beagle DJ. Probably how many years ago was that?
I was like 14 or 15.
Right.
4 or 5 years ago.
Right. Okay, so. And you don't seem terribly keen to talk about it, but
I don't know if any of that's been archived, but if it has been, destroyed. Do not find it. Don't go looking.
Okay. Well, I mean, Beagle Radio's had it's a very inclusive, co-pupper, so...
Yeah.
But we don't actually have many high school... We used to have, at the beginning, there were lots of high school teenagers doing shows, and that hasn't... they tended to fall away quite quickly. They tend to come in, do a few shows, and think, "Oh well, that's that," and I'll do something else, which is fine. Anyway, excuse me. So Cicada have got a gig here tonight, and I was saying earlier, your description in the program is very appealing to me. Somehow, it sort of shows that you're not taking yourself 100%. You're not being too self-important and serious.
Yeah. I think, and I'd imagine any small musician or any sort of not very, successful artist will understand the feeling of there is nothing more weird than having to sit down and write an advert for yourself.
Yeah.
And it does feel like, because I tend to feel really awkward about having to talk myself up in some ways, and that sounded really full of it when I said it. It was like, oh, I'm so humble, I'm the most humble person on the planet.
Yeah, I think you're overthinking it, Pat, yeah. But no, don't worry.
But no, and so sitting down and having to write, you should come to my gig and listen to my music and things like that is always a weird and slightly uncomfortable thing.
But at the same time, your kind of, I guess your sort of personality and your sense of humour comes through a little bit, you know, when you say another night of angst, obnoxious left-wing soapboxing and broken strings. I mean, you know, that to me, that shows that I'm you know, it's not someone who's, I guess that's sort of humility and maybe a bit of false humility as well. But how many people will be on stage tonight? Like how many are in the band?
Yeah, so... That's the unfortunate. There's some false advertising tonight because I was under the impression that this was going to be, I was going to be able to find members of my old band in Whangarei, but they're scattered across the country at the moment.
Oh.
And I also realised I was only going to be able to get here one day before, because I live in Wellington at the moment. Mostly.
I see. Right.
So. What was going to be a performance with a few people sort of walking on and off stage when I initially imagined it has since become just me.
Because that was a long time. It was like the beginning of August, wasn't it, when you had to register for the Fringe?
Yeah. So right. So I put potentially more than one person on stage and have failed to live up to that sort of half-assed promise.
Well, it's $10 or koha, so... You know, I don't think anybody's really got the right to demand their money back. They might not have paid anything in the first place.
You lied to me.
Yeah.
There's no one playing bass or like a snare drum. I want my money back.
So when you did have the band, was that your... What kind of instruments did you have?
Well, that was guitar, bass, drums and keyboards.
Right.
I quite like playing as Cicada because it means... It isn't... Like, having a name like that, it means that it sort of could be a band or it could be just one person.
Mm.
And
you've been Cicada for a while, haven't you?
Yes. I was Cicada from when I started, like, uploading bad little songs to YouTube. Again, I don't know if all the archives exist, and if they do, don't look for them. and I didn't want my name on them because I didn't want people to be able to Google Patrick Biss and
right.
it comes up with that.
Right.
So I was to cater after a Tumblr post, which was just like a little, listen, if cicada larvae can live underground for years and years and years and only come up to just scream their heads off and then die, then so can I, damn it. And I was like, that's great, I'm stealing that.
So that's the sort of, that's the background to the choice of cicada. Is that what they actually do, live underground for?
Yeah, they, for about 17 or 18 years, cicada larvae just live under the ground and then they come up and scream their heads off to attract a mate. And I don't see why anyone would, if I were another cicada, I wouldn't hear someone just going, don't know how that sounded on the microphone.
That I think it was pretty good. So you're based in Wellington now. So are you performing as cicada in Wellington as well?
Yeah, the last year, I sort of went into things and went, okay, so I went to, and that's what that album that we just heard something from, was me sort of thinking I was going to become another sort of folk singer type. And that's what a lot of this gig tonight's going to be. But I sort of realized there that a lot of that has been done, and a lot of the gigs that I want to be sort of doing moving forward are with a band and with a sort of more of an energy to them. And
right.
Also, there hasn't been a functioning folk scene since the 60s in a sort of a proper energetic and collaborative way, I think.
In this country?
Yeah.
Really?
There used to be something of one in Wellington, as I understand it from... But, and then I got dragged to some clubs by a friend, and it was sort of not my music at all, but it was... like the energy in the room and people dancing and things, and I sort of had a sense
to live music.
Yeah, wow. And I just
in Wellington.
And I had a sense of, oh, okay, I want to form a band then.
Because
like performing on stage on your own has its benefits. You can,
you're more in control.
And there's a sort of a, from seeing solo performances and from performing solo, there's a different energy to it, and there's a sort of an appeal to standing up and doing an entire set on your own, or to watching someone do an entire set on their own. But I sort of decided I want... But there's a fun in and an energy in being in a band. And so I decided that I wanted to form some kind of a band. And then it's taken me about a year to get around to doing that, so I haven't been properly gigging. And this will be my first proper, play a whole... long set to an audience where the actual event is rather than just, hey, do you want to play a few songs, we've got a gap in the set, sort of a thing.
Right, I see.
So
when you're getting a band together, how do you recruit people? How do you what's the genre, what kind of band would you be?
I feel like what I ought to do is find decent musicians, but I or something like that. But what I've ended up doing is just sort of meandering around, finding people who are sort of fun to be around.
And yeah.
Sort of become more of a friendship than a...
That probably is...
Not to say that the people aren't decent musicians, by the way, if they're listening, which I don't think they are.
But it's probably a more realistic, getting a bunch of very competent musicians together, you aren't necessarily going to get... There's something, there's got to be some sort of chemistry, hasn't there?
And... I've been reading, Jarvis Cocker has a book called Good Pop, Bad Pop, where he talks about, being a 15-year-old in his first band, and he has this comment of really how everyone should learn music is by wanting to do something for the fun of it and sort of thrashing around in the dark a bit.
Yeah.
And because this new band isn't really in any state to be gigging yet,
Does it have a name?
Yeah, it's just going to be Cicada again.
Okay,
It's too much of a habit for me to drop at this
point.
Fair
enough. Yeah.
There's a sort of a... But going back to everything and just being like, okay, let's play these chords and mess around and eventually find something that sounds okay. And just getting right back into the fun of that has been wonderful.
Cool. So how long's that been going on since you've been down in Wellington? Have you been sort of...
Yeah, it's... I've been trying to find... people to form a band with for a while, and it's been a bit of a mess, but we've been rehearsing and writing together and things like that for a couple of months now.
Great. Wellington's a good place to be doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just more people, more venues, more everything.
Yeah, yeah. I love... I was talking to Matt just outside before, yep. Saying a lot. But
it's okay, it's Beagle Radio. Yeah. Swearing and ums are okay.
Hell yeah. About the sense of like whangarei and 116 as this wonderful thing, and I've been sort of organising little gigs with friends and things like that all through high school, that sort of, our band won't be able to bring enough people to cover the cost of the venue, but if we bring three other people in, and all of those sorts of things, and the fun of that, and some of those guys have now moved to Wellington as well, and they all get more gigs than me. It's humiliating.
Oh.
But yeah, there is a smallness to whangarei, but it's a very charming one, and I think Fringe in that sort of everyone just doing things because they can and because they want to is really wonderful.
You really have to make your own fun in this town.
Yeah.
And luckily for us, this is fun. Like, this is how we have fun.
Exactly.
Wellington's probably a bit of a different beast. It's a bit more, perhaps a bit more competitive, but more like you've got a harder to get gigs, would you say? Or
it's funny. I think in any sort of situation where you're trying to get gigs and organise things, it's about who you know. I don't really know anyone yet because I haven't been. I've sort of been really lax as far as gigging goes, and really fallen behind on that. I don't know. I've heard a couple of people who I do know talk about, like, there are some slightly gatekeepy elements to everything. But I've also heard that there's a lot of really lovely, supportive people. And I don't really know enough to say either way.
So is that your main reason for moving to Wellington to pursue this? Is that your kind of... is that what you're doing down there?
Yeah. I'm a music student as well.
Uh-huh.
So
at the university?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it Vic have a music program?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's a different world. It's funny that just a completely different approach to music from people who've actually learned music.
So what sort of, is it done by style or genre, or like, is it just more like what's the background to it?
It's very classical centered. And very. I won't say anything disparaging about it. It's just a completely different sort of an approach to everything than anything I've ever learned.
But music for you was the obvious thing to study? Like, you was is that right?
It is a sort of a... It always sounds a bit... sort of ill-advised to say that I want to be a musician and that I'm trying to make that work as something. I work at a Countdown now, by the way.
Well, I mean, this is...
Yeah.
Surely this is the time of life when you
can
say and do things like that.
And it does become a sense of sort of, okay, so maybe it is ill-advised, but I also can't think of anything else I'd be doing.
I always think some people say you've got to have a backup plan. Have you ever heard that? You know, you've got to have something to fall back on. And I think, actually, you probably just need to not have a backup plan, because that's what you'll end up doing. Just focus on what you're really passionate about. Anyway, let's have a song. So if grab your guitar, what are you going to play for us now? Make sure it's in tune. Is this one from the new album, which is called Separate Ways?
Yeah, we might as well do a song from the album.
Which one?
We'll do... I'll do the one I'm sort of most proud of.
Okay.
Although that one involves a bit of shouting.
That's okay. Shouting's great.
All right.
It's a soundproof studio. Just
try not to clip the mics.
And there's nothing else on for us to disturb or disrupt. So what's the song called?
This is a song called Pistols at Dawn.
Okay. And what's the... Why is it a favourite? Like, what do you like about it? What's your...
I don't know. It's just one of those ones where I could, like, hear a version of it in my head, and then I tried to write that, and it sort of came through as I was intending it to. And
what's it about? Is it about a duel?
It's about closure, I guess. It's about, like, sort of going through a breakup and being a bit of an idiot and not knowing how these things work, and feeling like there should be some kind of a cinematic
kind of climax or denouement or whatever you call it.
Yeah, like it should work like it does in the movies and the TV shows, you know, it should, and the books, and it should feel like, oh, it's over and it's definitively over and I've had vindication and all these things and I know like who was in the right or whatever.
Yeah. It's never that, it was more messy than that though, right?
Or even messiness would make more sense than just something existing one day and not existing the next sort of a thing, and it's just, okay, that's how the life is, sort of a sense.
So the song is an attempt to get closure from that, would you say? Or?
It's the song's a feeling of wanting it, I think. I'm sort of hesitant to say that any sort of songs about
anything.
Just did it there. I definitely write things about things. And I can't not, and I sort of tend to be a bit on the nose about everything. Mm-hmm. But I feel like saying that this is a song about a breakup, whereas if it was about a specific thing, no one else would find anything appealing in it. And what it's actually always about is the feelings in that. And that's what's being expressed. And I didn't. The sentence needs closure now.
All right, let's
play the song.
Let's play the song. All right.
Do we need to think about mic positioning?
I think I'll just put my mic over nearer you.
All right. Hope everyone's enjoying it.
That should be fine.
What has become of the plans that were made? What was the point of the rain? Who's collecting the spoils from the wars you've won, or so you say? Who's gonna pay for the flowers on my grave? 'Cause I'm not quite sure. But I don't think you're gonna tell me. So come on, pistols at dawn. Oh, let's settle this gently. Oh, we haven't talked, I think, in a number of years, except for once very brief on the street, at the same traffic light with a few awkward stares and almost half of an effort to speak. You said you were pursuing a career on the stage, and it's going great from what I could tell. Oh, the act you put on to say you're doing okay deserved an Oscar by itself, and I wasn't quite sure. But I think you wanted to hate me then, so come on, pistols at dawn. Oh, baby, let's settle this like gentlemen. Oh, and I've never needed advice on how best to fuck something up. And I've never been quick on the draw. Feel free, shoot me down, down, down. Almost 2 decades on earth, so I should be done with this by now. It took me years to get over what you left me with, and a month you under someone else. And I'm not trying to win nothing back with no song, and I'm not trying to score no points neither. It's just the victory parades and the poppies are gone, and I'm still not sure who was the winner. Oh, and I'd like to know how you're sleeping at night with all of those crimes you committed. And I'd like to know how one handles this right once all the sanitized history's been written. I'm not quite sure.
quite, I'm not quite sure. I don't think I want to be. It's either pistols at dawn or fucking coffee and cake at the library.
Oh, that was Cicada.
Yep.
With Pistols at Dawn. I was trying to. I wanted to know who you listen to because that kind of had some, you know, resonances for me of certain singers. Who do you like?
I think a lot of that album was me trying to rip off Leonard Cohen.
I had to say that was the name that was on my, you know, my mind with the, not just also the lyrics, like the kind of the lyric and the lyrical kind of content, you know, just something about his imagery and his, you know, his, yeah.
It's always something that, like, worries me, because I do tend to get into a habit of, like, I will listen to one person a whole lot for a couple of months, and then I will try to, and I'll look at that and go, just that, exactly, I'll write like that.
Yeah.
And I always, like, don't manage that, and I think that's sort of with everyone is trying to write like someone else and ending up sounding like themselves. And I always have a slight worry that you can hear someone and go, oh, this person's trying to sound like Leonard Cohen, and it's a bit embarrassing. But yeah, it's him and it's Conor Oberst.
Bright Eyes. Guy from Bright Eyes, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And people like that.
Yeah.
Who just write in a certain way that I sort of...
Yeah, I know what you... I'm the same with get into an artist and just listen to them. I've really got into Rufus Wainwright suddenly. Love, you know, that... You know, that kind of very lush kind of orchestrated, apparently it's called Baroque pop. I never knew that before. So I guess, you know, what Leonard Cohen's great strength is, you know, he's writing about, you know, the fundamental kind of things in life, like relationships and love and, you know, the pain and the, you know, and that song sort of evoked that for me. It's sort of with a bit of humour as well. Leonard Cohen's got that kind of sort of, I don't know what you call it, kind of humour, sardonic or whatever. So how do you start? Do you start with the lyrics or do you start with the idea for this music or what?
I never quite know.
Oh.
That one, I had like... There was an earlier song which was very, very... ripping off Bright Eyes sort of a thing, which had the same, like, opening lyrics.
Yeah.
And they don't quite fit the rest of it, and it's just because I wanted to keep them in. and that song was sort of, I think that's why I like it so much, is it was just constructed from snippets, and then I sat down and wrote them all into one thing.
Right. Is that over a period of time, or did it kind of come out fully formed? Or
Most of the songs on... this album were written in January of this year and recorded in February. And then I just haven't got around to releasing them for a while.
That sounds quite an intensive, concentrated, creative period.
There's two of them that were written over the Delta lockdown. And then that one, which was just sort of written over the entire sort of that entire stretch sort of came together and or like in little bits. And then I sat down one day and finished the whole thing. And the little bits of lyrics that I'd sort of that I quite liked sort of in isolation, and then hadn't the sort of thing that you write down, think sounds nice, and it's one line and because it's one line and it's completely separate from everything else, you're never going to put it into anything, and then I actually managed to, which is a first for me. But
It must be a real joy writing songwriting like that when it comes together.
Yeah,
and you...
when it all works, it's just the most wonderful thing. There's a couple of songs where I have just sort of against my usual sort of nature been able to sit down and it's all worked in the first try. Which is not to say that I am someone who really goes over songs and sort of works hard on them. I think
You can leave it. You can walk away. You're not like a perfectionist.
I went through a phase this year where what I was doing was I was trying to write at least a song a day, or sometimes two, but at least one. And I think I don't think I'm a good songwriter. I think I write a lot of songs and then, just by pure, like, chimp in a typewriter thing, some of them are okay. just statistically speaking, some of them are going to be better than...
But isn't there also the thing where you get better? Like, there's a craft element to it? Like,
yeah, and there's a sort of a sense of, like, actually being able to sit down and, oh, wow, I actually know what I'm going for here.
Yeah.
There's a weird realization that I've had this year, rather than just sort of... in the past, it's just been, okay, these are chords that are sort of sound okay together. I'm going to hit them until they make sense, and I'm going to shout over the top of them.
So your playing's improving as well, it sounds like. You're becoming more, I don't know, like you've got a better sense of what you want to do musically.
It's funny because without, like, because I have been gigging so much less than I used to do, I sort of don't have anything to go off. And I don't want to say anything from a purely, like, internal perspective.
Right.
But I feel like I'm sort of getting a better grasp of what I want to be doing.
Right. Hey, we've got time for one more song. I'm a bit worried that the podcast stops at 12, so this will be recorded for posterity. And so if we can just fit one more song in before the end, that would be great. And then we can carry on talking afterwards for a little bit, but I just want this to be on the podcast if possible.
Sweet.
So what are you going to play for us?
I'll do, what am I going to do? Oh, this is a mistake. We will do, should we do another one off this album?
Yeah,
let's
do another one off the album.
New one, or, okay, do another one off the album. That gives me an actual list of things to choose from.
Yeah, there you go.
And we will do... one of the other ones that I'm more proud of, which is called Delilah Leaving. And this is just the, because of the link to Cohen.
Yeah.
That it's a song, there's a lot of, like, that sort of, love song and, thing where it's all, I'm completely dedicated and destroying myself for this person.
Yeah.
And it's so romantic that I'm I desperately need this person 24/7. And that's not very healthy.
No.
So I wanted, like, that all those little images and the Hallelujah is an overused song. It's a beautiful song.
It is.
And that's why it's so sad that it's everyone's noticed that it's beautiful and used it as a shorthand to show that
totally agree.
And whereas it only really needed two people to play it, and it was
Leonard Cohen and Jeff Buckley.
I was going to say Leonard Cohen and John Cale.
Has John Cale done a version of it?
With piano. He's the person who really, I think, he popularized it. And Jeff Buckley heard his version. Arguably Daniel Kahn's version, which is translated into Yiddish. And it just sounds like a song that was meant to be written in Yiddish.
It's probably the most covered song ever, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be.
Anyway, but we get on with the song, because otherwise we're going to lose it off
the
podcast.
This is a song from the perspective of the other person in that sort of a setting.
Okay.
For want of better words. Isn't this lovely? Your hair in my hands. No pillow left to lean on. And no strength left to stand. As you tell me this love has only served to make you weaker. And you're too weak in love now to try to from some leaning reliance on some black and white reel. But babe, this ain't classic or silence. How do you think it would feel? Oh, to hear you day in and day out.